Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Game Junk Podcast for March 2015. This is episode number 23, and my name is Sean.
My name is Frank.
My name is Andrew.
Coming up on this month's episode, we're going to be talking about our top 10 games of 2014. A little late, but better late than never. We're also going to be talking about a bunch of news, including some holographic goggles, more VR stuff. And also in Hot Button, we're going to get to the Nintendo YouTube revenue share debate. And lots of stuff we played. Maybe not all the newest stuff, but lots of stuff anyway. So thanks for tuning in. I guess for people who heard the last episode, it was a little bit of a special episode, kind of focused on the launch of Citizens of Earth. So, Frank, you weren't present. So it's been a while.
No, unfortunately. I listen, though. It is fun to be able to listen to one of these once in a while, you know? And to not participate. It was an absolute joy. I think you guys did a bang-up job, including Ryan.
Wow. Great. Thanks.
Glad you enjoyed it.
I also got a lot of great feedback from coworkers too. Great inside talk. You know,
inside baseball.
Almost a post-mortem. Just really solid stuff.
Excellent.
I'm not trying to sound sarcastic. If I am, I'm sorry. It really was good.
Well, we do have to follow up a little bit on that.
Sure do.
So, I mean, obviously the game came out.
Yep.
And do you have any word on how it's doing? Like, did Game Junk just, you know, put it over the top? And, like, what's going on?
Oh, yeah. So, well, the first thing I need to do is put my foot right in my mouth, because on the last show we talked about day one patches and how all these games are coming out broken, and lo and behold, Citizens of Earth apparently had a whole bunch of crashes in it. So that's what happens when it slips through. So, I mean, prime example, Eden Industries has zero QA, Atlas had about six, and then we had Nintendo and Sony QA on it. And none of them found these crashes that apparently are plaguing people. They seem pretty random. You know, some people go through the game crash never. Other people go through and crash 10 times.
I got one.
One yeah, crash. So, and that's a problem with having builds that are, you know, live at all different times. So anything can happen. And we're working on patches. They should be done. They're in testing with Nintendo. And the Sony one, we'll be there soon. We ran into a little bit of an issue where our Vita development kits broke. So
what?
The patch was a little bit delayed as I sent it back to Sony, and then there was this whole issue with FedEx not actually wanting to take it over the border because it was too much money, and it came back. So I had to pay $70 for overnight shipping twice, and then it got there about 10 days later. So it's a little bit of a debacle, but they're there. We're working on it. Just two little issues to work out with the Vita, and then they'll all be off. And the Nintendo ones are being tested right now by Nintendo, and hopefully patches will be in people's hands very soon.
So I guess maybe this is also a, because we talked about how you guys were launching on all these different platforms at once and how a small team doesn't usually do that. I mean, I would think that this is a little bit of a side effect of that.
Well, that and having no QA team
right
internally. So I think a good learning experience. We also talked that we should have done a sort of like a closed beta on Steam. I think that would have been really helpful. In hindsight, because the Steam community was so helpful once the game launched in finding bugs. We had this one guy on the Steam forums that was doing daily bug reports that were so detailed.
Wow.
We could find them all instantly. He's like, yeah, just do this and follow these steps and bam. And we'd have like daily updates from him of the new bugs he was finding. And they were super obscure stuff. Hmm. And so, like, he might be joining the Eden team.
But he's looking for a job, apparently.
But also, with Steam, I don't know if people know this, but it's really easy to upload new builds to Steam. You don't have to go through any sort of major certification process. And you can embed, like, information in your build. So if the game crashes, we can add information to find out what's actually going wrong. So where it's crashing, what's the cause, that kind of stuff. Hmm. Whereas Sony's actually really good. They have crash log reports that you can pull down, and that was actually very helpful as well. So between the Sony reports and the Steam builds, we were able to fix the vast majority, if not all, of the crashes. But if we were just to do that earlier, it would have been much better. I think we just should have done that. Yeah, it's a learning experience, and you know, when you're so swamped and you have a publisher, it's a little different because you don't know if you want to do that. So we'll probably include that. If we get another publishing deal, we'll probably include that as a caveat in there, as a clause.
So I don't know, like, can you also, I don't know if you're allowed to talk about this or not, but like you were just mentioning off air, like you guys kind of, like there's old versions that are essentially what people were getting on day one, kind of, right? Like,
yeah.
And,
yeah.
And that's kind of also a byproduct of different certification processes for different platforms, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's right. So, like, I think we started the certification process in early November or late October. And the worst case scenario was actually the PS4 in Europe. And that one was actually approved something like November 4th. So, 2 full months, over 2 months before our ship date. And I think some of the Nintendo builds were certified mid-December. So there's like a month and a half worth of fixes that are in the Wii U builds that are not in that PS4 build.
Right. So the thinking is that certification takes a long time. Let's get a jump on it. We'll do that early so we get the game approved and it's, you know, ready in time for release.
That's right.
But yeah, then you do it so early that...
Yeah, we actually weren't expecting it. Yeah, we weren't expecting it to be approved.
But you don't want to resubmit with new bug fixes because then you might fail the certification. And
yeah, there is that risk. And we probably had enough time to do that, but I think we were just so swamped doing all the other stuff. We didn't want to risk, you know, missing one and then kind of having to pull back the release date or anything like that. So
right.
I think by the time everything was approved, it was too late to kind of go back and resubmit, because you actually have to pull them out of like a production server essentially and say we want to recertify the whole game again, which could be, I mean, Nintendo takes about 2 weeks to do a full test pass of the game, so you know that's a lot of time. And then if you fail that, now you're looking at a month you needed or more if you fail again.
Right.
So it's kind of a risky proposal if you do choose to go down that route, and especially because we're going through that testing process over the Christmas break, so you also have like a 1 to 2 week window where no one's working, so you have to kind of take that into account. So
right,
it was a little bit of politics, a little bit of just reality, and it just wasn't good to go down that route. So now we're patching it and we're adding stuff in, so people, I don't think we've announced what we're adding in, but people will get some extra perks on different platforms and things like that. So
cool.
The biggest one probably for Wii U people, which I've announced on the Facebook page, is we've cut the load times in roughly about half. So loads were taking, in the worst case, about 20 seconds. Now they only take 10, which is quite an improvement.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I got a game on the Wii U with terrible load times I want to talk about, but we'll get to that. Frank?
Huck, those are all great stories, but I got one question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a pathological liar? I don't think so either. But that I'm alluding to an interview with Peter Molyneux, who that's the first question, which we'll talk about later. But it just
maybe we should talk about it now.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have the best intentions, genuinely, and things don't always go as we plan, and no one's perfect, and like the gaming media are just savages. Like,
yep.
Well, I understand. Well, no one would want something to be broken. I'm sure there are cases where people have knowingly shipped broken stuff for whatever reasons. But you know, we can all. I think everyone just needs to relax a little bit. I mean, this Molyneux interview is just pure savagery, as far as I'm concerned.
I guess one thing before we jump into Molyneux, just to toot my own horn a little more, is that Actually, before, for the last show, no reviews had been out yet.
Right.
And so Citizens of Earth is probably the most polarizing game I've seen in a long time. And yeah. Even the head PR guy at Atlas who's working with us said, like, he's never seen a game be more polarizing than Citizens of Earth. I mean, we've had 10 out of 10s. We've had 3 out of 10s. And people either love it or they hate it. The only good thing that we found from the majority of the reviews is everyone liked the art style, which was like a really big contention on the internet before launch. So that was something we were really interested in seeing how it kind of played out. But everyone seemed to like the art style, which was kind of a relief to us because we really liked it. But, you know, when you go from thinking you got a solid, you know, 7 or 8 game, and then you get a 10, and then you get a 3, then you get a bunch of 6s, and then a 9, it's all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's weird. Like, I read a lot of those reviews, and I mean, I see some of the points in some of the negative ones, but like to the actual score that came from that does not seem fair, really. And I guess I just wonder sometimes, like, to me, it's like if you guys would have just got like 7s across the board, that probably would have done you a lot better. Because if somebody just happens to see like a 3 out of 10, that's going to scare them away, even if you have a 10 out of 10 from somewhere else.
That's right. Yeah.
And
I mean, I mean, the one review I saw that I think is the biggest one I like is we got an 8 out of 10 from Polygon, and I respect the guys at Polygon. So, you know, I like that one. I think we got a 6 from Destructoid, and the girl who reviewed it, she just didn't like the battle system. So, of course, you know, an RPG, the battle system is like 80% or more of the game. Of course, if you don't like the battle system, you're not going to like the game. So that one I understood. But then some of the other ones, you know, from playing the game so much, I can tell that they just didn't get it. You know, like I've listened to reviews and read reviews where guys only tried like 3 or 4 of the citizens, which is not the point of the game. The point of the game is to, you know, try them all and see what their skills are and how they work together. And, you know, if you're having trouble traversing the world, you got to recruit one of the characters, one of the citizens that lets you traverse the world better, you know? So that's the whole point of the game. And a lot of people seem to miss that.
Yeah.
Or not a lot, but, you know, some people. And some people that write reviews miss that. So,
yeah.
It's hard to take when you see that. But, oh well, what can you do?
Frank, before we jump into the Molyneux thing also, what's going on with Lost Orbit? Do you have an update for us?
Oh, she's tightening up real good these days. Just a few last wrinkles to iron out. She's pretty much ready to go. Should have some announcements soon, I hope, as to the final release date.
Nice.
Beautiful.
I know the boys are out at PAX East this weekend, so if you happen to be out there, give them a what's up from Frank and try the game out. Let us know what you think.
Yeah, it's a busy week in the game industry right now. GDC and PAX East are going on, both at the same time.
Yeah, and the news couldn't be any more fucking boring. I'm like, give me some goods. This is the worst.
John Carmack's
Knock
doing
my
a talk.
Socks off.
So, well, let's get to some of the news from the past few months. you know, the Molyneux thing, I guess, for people who aren't aware, obviously, Peter Molyneux is a pretty well-known, pretty well-respected game designer who, you know...
Fable, Populous,
Black and White. Like, a lot of strategy games in particular. And so his latest... Is this his latest game? I think it is. Goddess was released on Steam through Early Access. And it was also... Was there a Kickstarter behind that as well or no?
Yes, there was.
Absolutely.
Okay, so it's kind of both of those things, I think, that are leading to the backlash, which is that, you know, the game's still in development and a lot of people have paid for this game and they were promised certain things and those things aren't there yet. And people are starting to get pretty angry. And, you know, while I understand that to a certain extent, I kind of agree that this, I mean, the interview to me, like Frank, you were kind of, this was an interview in Rock, Paper, Shotgun that sort of takes Molyneux to task for all this stuff. And, you were saying, Frank, that, you know, you think it's the game media. I think it's the game like gamers themselves. Like the, I think the guy who was doing the interviewing just knew this is what people wanted to hear. So he was kind of just like echoing what everybody's saying in forums and stuff like that. And people loved it. Yeah. People were eating it up. They're like, yeah, finally. Yeah. Ask him the hard questions. But it's just, I don't know. It's tough. I mean, and that's part of the problem with these Kickstarters and the early access and all this stuff. It's just like you make promises and suddenly people think, well, I'm part of this process. I own this game. Do what I want. And I don't think that's good for anybody.
Well, there are some gray areas here that are up to speculation. One being that the game is also released as a microtransaction-based game,
right,
on the iTunes and App Store. So they are he's quoted revenue numbers for those games, which are very high. And I mean, he says, you know, there's publisher stuff, iTunes Store stuff. There's costs. Well, that might seem like big numbers. That's not all going directly to the company. And there's a publisher on iTunes too, I believe. So that factors in. I don't know the details of those numbers. I mean, another aspect is, I actually give the guy credit for standing toe-to-toe with the guy and answering his questions. And he may be lying. I honestly don't know. I don't think you'd know unless you worked really close with him, or, you know, even then you might not know. He there's secrets and things at game companies that only certain people know. And you just do the best you can do, and you work hard and hope things turn out for the best. And you have to take the word of some people at some point. And I think the people who are working there, from what I could see in the video, are, I would assume, are trying hard to do the best they can. And I don't know. I think it is a problem to overpromise in Kickstarter stuff. And where it becomes an even bigger problem is like an interpretation of what a promise is. Like saying some system will exist doesn't say how refined the system is, what kind of interface will exist. There's so many vagaries when it comes to describing things in games that it's easy to, I don't know, for there to be fine print on everything, so to speak, or open to interpretation.
And I think,
so you have all that going on, and then it's also early access. They haven't shipped a product, and I mean, if that's what happens with Kickstarters, like it's a scary process. When I understand that some people do feel entitled to something, you could argue they did get something. They got an early access version of the game, which would normally cost $20. So it's early access is a whole nother can of worms, and what that represents or what it is. And I don't know. It's just such a gray area. I just think that interview in particular was a little too much for me. And I just felt like the interviewer never switched paths at all. Like, you can get that stuff out of your system, keep pushing, but when the whole interview is essentially repeating the same question in a different way every time and waiting for the guy to crack or do something, like, it just feels, I don't know, not very classy, I would say.
I think for me, the question early on, which I didn't read the whole article because it's, like Frank was saying, it seemed to just be the same thing over and over again. But one of the first questions he asked was basically, you know, how did you not know that you were going to be over budget, talking about him needing to go get a publisher after getting the Kickstarter money and getting more than they asked for? And Molyneux basically said, like, you know, you can't know how, like, anyone who tells you they know how much a game's going to cost is an idiot. They're either like a genius or an idiot.
Yeah.
And he's like, you can't, anything creative, you can't really like put a, you can't judge. And he even used an example, like, I had a people over to renovate my bathroom, and they went 50% over budget, you know, and that's not even, you know, that's a much more concrete thing. You kind of know what you have to do. There might be some hidden things in the walls, right? But 50% over, that's quite a bit. 50% over budget on a game could be a lot. Mm-hmm. And I felt like Molyneux's response to that was perfect. And then the guy just kind of was like, no, but he almost said he was wrong. He almost said Molyneux was wrong in his response.
Right.
And that's when I kind of switched off. Like, this interviewer literally has no idea what he's talking about. He's obviously never made a game. He's never been in the environment where tough decisions are made.
Well, he doesn't even really want answers. He just wants to hold the guy at gunpoint, essentially.
Yeah, like stir the pot.
Yeah.
And then the one thing that, I mean, Frank's slogan, who thought this was fun, right? You can put something on paper in a Kickstarter and be like, yeah, we think this is going to be fun. And then you implement it and it's not fun. And Molyneux is, you know, he's a seasoned guy. He looks at it, he says, who thought this was fun in the first place? It's not fun now. And he cuts it. Now, is he now beholden to the Kickstarter backers because that was in the Kickstarter page? I don't think he should be. But I think people think it should be because they still think it's going to be fun.
Yeah, they don't trust that the guy at the top making the decisions knows what's best for the game when clearly he does. And
yeah.
But again, like it comes back to like people thinking that, well, I have my opinion, and my opinion is more valid because I've put money into this. But it's like, how does that make any sense? Like,
yeah.
If you're worried about getting a product or think you're entitled to a product, don't use Kickstarter. Wait until it's available for purchase and then buy it then. If you're interested in seeing the process and having a stake in that and curious to see how that unfolds and that $20, $60, whatever you spent isn't a risk to you, you're not going to miss that, then I would say take the chance. Or you really believe in something and genuinely want to support it for better or for worse so that the best product possible comes out. Now, if this game never ships, then I think there is some potential problems. But if something does come out soon, it's tough to kill the guy. And he said, if you want us to ship a piece of shit to say, yeah, we made the game we said we would in some capacity, he'll do that anytime. But he's not doing that. And again, these could all be lies. I don't know. I don't know the guy.
I don't think he's lying. I don't think so.
Is that Mighty Number 9? It's still coming out, but I think that game is overdue, isn't it? Like,
I'm sure it is.
I don't know when their targets were.
Well, I mean, the perfect...
Again, it's part of people being easy targets. Molyneux is an easy target, or a person people like to take out agendas with in the media.
A perfect comparison is the Double Fine game, Broken Age, which also... you know, kept getting delayed. They had to get extra money and all this stuff. And people, there has been a bit of a backlash with that as well, but not nearly to this level. And
because people like Tim Schafer.
Yeah, generally there is still goodwill towards Tim Schafer, I think. And the thing is, like, I'm not an expert on the business side of games, but I would really find it hard to believe that most AAA blockbuster games don't go over what their original budget is, unless it's like a game that just has an unlimited budget to begin with. Because, like, that's the thing. So many of these games now, they won't ship them if there's any chance that they're not going to get, you know, 95% scores across the board. Like, they know it has to be perfect. It has to be amazing. And they just will keep going. And so many games get delayed because of that. And so, like, the problem is when you look at Kickstarter, it's all about we've raised this much money and that's exactly what we have to make this game with. And that's not really that feasible, I don't think. I mean, indie games, you would think, yeah, you could probably do that. But I don't know. As soon as it's something where it's, we're still trying to figure out the design of this game through the development process, then you're in trouble.
I think the other weird thing about Kickstarter is kind of the other end where people get too much money and then they just start adding all these, you know, perks and whatever that just suck time away from the game.
Yeah.
It just seems, I don't know, it seems counterintuitive to making a game. And I think that's fine for other Kickstarter projects like board games and things like that. But I really think that sort of stuff, like physical rewards and all that crap, should be left out of games. I think it just takes away from people, like, people, games take a long time to make, and if you're wasting your time on that, and I don't know if Goddess had that kind of stuff, but I'm sure it did. And you know, that kind of stuff is just wasting their time. But people want it, right? They want that shirt. But when you have 20,000 shirts to put out, it takes up a lot of time.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on. Let's talk about some Amiibo stuff. I know we've kind of broached the topic a few times in the past. Frank, you haven't really fully had a chance to give us your current stance on Amiibos. You know, I guess in terms of news related to Amiibos, they did recently announce that they will sort of unlock trial, I don't even know, like, I guess timed versions of classic NES games. And, you know, then there's also the whole gold Mario Amiibo, which, you know, is causing pandemonium. What's up, Frank? Are you on board with Amiibos yet or what?
Oh, well, as I say this, I hate them, but I'm looking at 10 of them on my shelf right now, so... I did buy them before I decided to go digital. These are physical. but at the same time, I did read a rarity guide today, and it said that Fox McCloud is officially rare, so I'm feeling pretty good about that. I'm looking at him up there.
But will you ever sell it?
Yeah, I think I might actually. Now that I know he's rare, I might sell all of them. Now that I'm seeing these exclusive gold Marios and all this other stuff and figures I'll never be able to get. I mean, it's almost like it was karma. The game God speaking. Because I have been a huge proponent to exclusivity. That's all I wanted. And now I got something like that, and I'm not happy about it. I'm not happy that I can't get them. So, got to face a bit of the music here, and maybe it's my just desserts.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny.
I like the design of the figures. I think they're
pretty
cool.
I was not really that interested in Amiibos and thought they're kind of a, you know, just another little money add-on by Nintendo to get the kiddies all to collect everything. And then I started seeing, like, oh, you know, maybe there's some cool uses for these things. And then I wanted to get the Captain Toad one because I've been playing Captain Toad. It actually adds some, you know, extra stuff in the game. And that one was like, you know, went on sale and immediately sold out everywhere and was super hard to find. And so I don't know if I'll ever be able to get my hands on that one. I did actually...
The Toad one is hard to find?
Yeah. I mean, it's not out yet, but all the pre-orders went up and sold out, like, right away. And I did actually grab a Samus one just because I heard that those are suddenly becoming rare, and I was like, I kind of would like that, I guess. And then I grabbed a Toon Link one for kind of the same reason, which I don't know if those are hard to find yet or not. It seemed like they were at the time. But, it is kind of...
semi-common, I read today.
It's getting annoying. I'm already starting to regret that I even put any money into these things because it's...
Time to switch to Skylanders.
Yeah, maybe.
It is kind of weird that... I think Skylanders are fantastic. It is kind of weird that there's these toys that are for kids. They're supposed to be for kids, yet kids have access to none of them. And you could say, well, kids don't even know that there's rare ones versus not rare ones, but they do. I remember being a kid, a 10-year-old kid, and not being able to find the blank for Dick Tracy toys and losing my fucking mind. Yep. Only to realize later they made like 20 of them, and my aunt and my mom are looking for this fucking toy all over the place, and you can't get it.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're rare, but I have a similar story with Transformers, and you know how they used to come in those, like, you know, those, you buy five and they all build the big guy?
Yep.
You know what I'm talking about? And the construction guys.
Constructicons.
And I could never find whoever I was missing.
The one guy.
Never. Yep. So I had, you know, I had the legs, I had the arms, but no connecting body there.
Well, I mean,
Sean's got the game. He's got the desire. He's got the child who loves Captain Toad.
Yeah, I mean.
And guess what? he can't get Captain Toad.
I was just going to say, I mean, like, I'm interested in the Captain Toad because it adds, you know, an extra, well, not an extra mode to the game, but, like, an extra objective, I guess, to the game. But, like, yeah, my son would genuinely be excited about a Captain Toad figure, and it's, like, fucking impossible to find. It's like, ugh.
Oh, so are they dad mentality. Watch out.
Dad mentality. Yep. So are they, like, opposable? Like, can you actually play with them, or are they
no,
just
you
kinda
can't
like
play
statuettes?
With them.
Fuck no.
Not playable at all.
They're just to sit on shelves.
I mean, I guess to be fair, like, in terms of adding functionality to games, if you're into Smash Brothers, there's probably some good stuff there, but a lot of the other games, they haven't fully embraced it yet. I'm not sure if the Kirby game has anything cool in it or not.
From where I'm sitting right now, I got a nice little upskirt look of Peach over there. Pretty sweet.
Nice. So just to go back to what I was saying about the NES games, though. So, like, I briefly read this story. Like, what is the deal with this, Frank? Because this seems like the cheapest, like, chintziest thing that Nintendo's done in a long time.
Oh, yeah. So you get to play, from what I know, a brief demo of the original game featuring that character. So what are they hoping for? Some dumb little kid buys Mario toy, plays Mario. Oh, I like this. Oh, sure, son, we'll buy that game for you. $10.
It's a classic.
It's just like, it's just trying to get little kids hooked on the drug that is Nintendo. And it just might work.
Well, like, remember when Animal Crossing came out, I think the GameCube version, and you could get actual NES games as gifts and stuff in that game?
Oh, yeah.
And, like, now we're to the point where, like, you're actually buying a physical product, and they can't even give you, like, a whole NES game with it. They're like, no, you can only play 10 minutes of, you know.
It's all about the carrot, man. Just the carrot and the stick.
It's, yeah, it kind of bugs me.
Yeah, it'd be kind of cool if they did give you the whole game.
Yeah.
It seems pretty fair. I remember with ambassador programs and just early adopter stuff with Wii U, they would let you buy Super Metroid, F-Zero, other stuff for 79 cents.
Yeah.
So you're spending.
Speaking of that, did you cash in all your Club Nintendo points?
Not yet. But you're essentially getting, like, these toys are probably close to 80-90% markup on them. They probably cost $1 to make. They're charging $14.
Right. You're talking the Amiibos.
Yeah. So I mean, to throw in a game with that, it's costing them nothing. It would just sweeten the pot.
Yeah, I agree. I think you maybe missed my last thing I asked you, but did you cash in all your Club Nintendo points?
I heard you, and no, I have not done it yet.
You haven't done it yet?
I've cashed in some for... No.
When does it expire?
June or July, I think.
Oh. I don't know. I remember when they, you know, first posted all the rewards. It was like you couldn't even get on the Club Nintendo page. It was insanity.
Yeah, I got another 3DS game holder case. Like, what? You know what bothers me? Okay, give me some digital stuff. That's fine. What's the point? I can just, like, you're not giving me anything I can't get otherwise. The cool thing about Club Nintendo was some neat physical stuff that
exclusivity.
You couldn't get anywhere. Exclusivity, but not a lockdown exclusivity. Mm-hmm. It's just a fun thing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if I would have seen some cool physical items in that final list, I probably would have gone for those instead of the digital games, but there was nothing. So
they're back now, bud.
Like what?
Bunch of stuff. 3DS holders, posters, t-shirts.
Not that interested in any of that stuff. All right, well, let's move on. Let's talk about some Microsoft stuff. They actually had some pretty big announcements related to Windows 10. Obviously, the first one is that when Windows 10 is released, it will have some stuff built in to the Xbox One. Essentially, any Microsoft device running Windows 10, so I guess, you know, PCs, laptops, tablets, will be able to stream Xbox One games to those devices. So, you know, Nintendo has the Wii U. Sony has Remote Play for the Vita. Now Microsoft has their version of this, right? Is that what this is?
I believe so, yes.
I think so. I'm still not clear as to whether or not you're streaming the content from your system, or if you have a digital library, you can stream those games from essentially something else with your profile.
I think it's from
I think it's from
the system.
Yeah, I'd be pretty surprised if you could play it, you know, just over the cloud or something, and you're not in proximity of your Xbox.
You think you have to be in proximity too?
Yeah. Well, like on the network, yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, that's stupid.
Yeah.
I could be off, but I thought I also heard that the controller needs to be within range. I could be totally off on that, though. It was a while ago I read this, I think.
Well, I guess...
Ignore that. That's probably completely wrong.
Well, but I mean, like, how else are you going to play...
I don't know. I thought maybe you'd connect it just to your PC. Like, if you had a wired Xbox controller, it would work. But I don't know. I thought I read that wasn't the case, but I could be wrong. Maybe I was just thinking like, for a tablet.
Yeah, for a tablet, you'd have to probably use your...
Yeah, I'm not
Xbox
sure.
Xbox controller.
Anyways, cut that.
Leaving it in.
All right. Good.
No, not real. You can connect a controller to a Windows tablet.
Oh yeah, you're right. Actually, I'm still thinking of the Apple world where this is, you know, almost unheard of.
You need proprietary cable to the proprietary connector.
Yeah.
We're talking Surface Pro, dude. This thing is a PC, laptop, tablet, all in one.
It's true. I've actually. The guy at my work had one, and I was pretty impressed by it.
Things weigh a fucking ton.
Yeah?
The Surface Pros? Yeah.
I like it.
Well, they're a laptop, computer, tablet all in one. What do you expect?
I think they're pieces of shit. I think Windows 10 is a piece of shit.
We'll see. We'll see. Microsoft might be back in the game, Frank. You never know.
Well, they're back in my game, at least in video games, but when it comes to operating systems, they're turds.
Yeah, except for that, like, 98% market share they have.
Ouch. So the other kind of big announcement that they made, which, you know, you guys can say if you think this is pure vaporware or not, but they did kind of unveil a new technology, the Microsoft HoloLens, which everybody else is going with the VR headsets. Microsoft is doing something a little bit different. They're going for more of an augmented reality thing. And like from the video that I watched, I mean, I don't know if they've gone into more detail in terms of what application this has to gaming specifically, but it seemed like they were kind of selling it as something for, you know, just like a new interface for anything. And, you know, so it's like things overlaid over, you know, what you see in the room in front of you and being able to kind of like play with 3D models of stuff. And I don't know, like it seemed kind of interesting, but at this point I don't even know, like it's like a promo video for something that could exist. I don't even know how far along it is or where it's at. I don't know. Do you guys see potential in this?
I think I'm on record of saying that Microsoft, over the last few years, has been just chasing the leader. And so, you know, they started with Wii. They were chasing the Wii, so they made the Kinect. Then they were chasing Netflix, so they were going that, like, TV, TV, TV aspect of Xbox One.
Right.
Failed there, too. And now... they're chasing the Google Glass. They're chasing the big dog on the block, Google. And I hate to say it, but I think it's going to be another big old failure for Microsoft. I don't know. I can't see this being useful. I don't think you would get the immersion that you want when you're putting a headset on your head to look like an idiot. I don't think you want to like see the world and then add little stick figures. Like maybe if you're playing like D&D or a board game or something, or like battle chess, you know, like Star Wars battle chess thing. I could see that maybe having an application. But I don't know if you're playing a game.
I would be interested in that.
Yeah. Battle chess, yo.
Yeah, that's the only thing.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. Like, if I think of, like, what kind of the other VR devices are promising, and then I look at what this thing is promising, I mean, the difference is just you can see the world around you, but what's the benefit in that?
Doesn't the DS have AR?
Yeah, and it's like, does anybody ever use it?
No.
Like, you can take a picture of your bedroom and have, like, a 3D toad pop out.
Or what's that
the picture?
Animal pets game? You like pet
Nintendogs?
Nintendogs. I'm sure that uses it.
Sure, yeah, probably. But yeah, well, I mean,
I'm
Connectimals.
I'm so on a different page than you two. I think it's
revolutionary.
I think it's bullshit. I don't think it'll happen for another 15, 20 years applicably what we see in that video. But I think their use of that is more interesting to me than a VR headset. And at least you said chasing the tail. I think at least it's different. Like, what's the Project Morpheus and the other HTC? That's chasing the tail of Oculus. At least this is a different take on it in some respects.
But it is not Google Glass, right?
Thing. Hey. Yeah, I guess. And
I mean, even
I don't
Google,
know if Google Glass is that good.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what I was going to say is that if they're chasing Google Glass isn't even a proven success yet, so.
But Huck's going to call out Microsoft for, with Kinect, trying to ride the coattails of the Wii. If we're going to fucking call shot or take shots here, what about PlayStation Move? How quickly we forget about that sack of shit. At least Microsoft committed to the Kinect and is trying to make it better. Good God. Dwight guy's in love with his Kinect features.
I don't know about that. I would like to be.
Oh,
but
my God. When you got it right away, you're like, I'm liking it. I don't want to say anything yet, but I'm digging it.
Well, I like the...
That's your quote.
I like the voice commands. I just, like, I wish there were more. It feels like there were more games, Kinect games for the 360, and now they've kind of, I don't know, there's a few things, but it feels like they kind of abandoned it. Not as much as
cares,
Sony abandoned...
Man, it's not about the games.
What's it about?
It's about improving the home experience.
Yeah, well, that stuff's cool. I'm down with that. But I'm just...
Like, at least they're not trying to make corny games that you just roll your eyes at. They're trying to use it in...
I love corny games, Frank. You should know this by now.
That's true. Now, one other thing. I do like the idea of the AR reality. Like, when you're watching your favorite sci-fi movies, you know, Terminator, all that stuff, that's what it is, man. That's what it's all about. Analyzing an environment. That's where the future's at. What's the point of putting a helmet on you that's a TV screen? All you're adding is motion sensing technology, essentially. Yes, it's more immersive, but Terminator has told us that's not the future.
Terminator. You mean cyborgs have told us. We're not cyborgs.
Yeah, like the
right?
way he'll augment reality. He'll highlight, put a mesh over something like life form. Like, that's what we're trying to get to, right? We're
Shorts,
not. Well, yeah.
We're
I mean, like, if I'm in the middle of a war zone, maybe it's useful. I don't know that it's that applicable to my day to day life. But
Frank, tell me a game you're going to play on the AR headset.
I'm not looking at it for games. I'm looking at it as technology, and I like the idea of being able to sit in any room and project a TV on any wall in my house.
I like that. I think that's
play.
Pretty cool.
Oh, no, you love the fucking thing. Look.
Well, I mean, that was the original video they had like a couple years ago that I think we talked about.
What about the Aluma Room?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
That's awesome, too. Aluma Room's fucking killer. Now, I love the idea. You want to talk about the glass and being able to play a system anywhere. What about being able to do any media thing you want, literally in any room, as long as you got a blank wall? Or, if you don't, within the scope of your glasses. I mean, surely we can say, in some capacity, the Microsoft glasses are, or the theory of them, is kind of a subset of virtual reality.
Yeah,
maybe the other way around. It's a subset. You could have the glasses potentially take up your entire field of vision and still be like a motion sensing device.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I was saying is that in a weird way, like, they're not that different. You could probably do the same games for Oculus as you could for this Microsoft thing. It's just the difference is the Microsoft thing doesn't block out the real world. But yeah. Does that matter? I don't know. If you're sitting in a darkened room,
or it probably
cares?
Could. Or it probably could break, block off the world if you wanted it to. It's flexible. It's unique. It's portable. It's sentient. This is the future.
Well, I guess we need to talk to Huck City over here about the VR revolution, though, because you're the only one. I mean, Frank, have you played with the Oculus at all or no?
I've held one in my hands.
As far as I've come,
one
as
on
well.
My head.
So you actually got to try out the Morpheus.
That's right. Yeah, I was at a Sony PS4 Dev Day in Toronto. I guess it was in October. It was quite a while ago, but we haven't really had a show appropriate to talk about it. And so they had three demos there. They had one where you play as a knight and you're kind of attacking things, and you had two move controllers, so you can use either hand to pick up things. And then the other one was you're in a shark tank and a shark swimming around you. And then the other one was Street Luge. Right. I only did the night one, but I watched like some other people do the other ones. And so the first reaction is that the setup they had, you almost need an assistant to get it going, because you have the glasses and then they had headphones over top of that. And then you had the two move controllers. So if you were playing this in your home, you'd almost have to need to have like a side table where you knew where everything was.
You need a robot assistant.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, you need a spotter.
You need a spotter. Yeah, that's right. So that's one problem. Now, the Morpheus did have a little... it didn't like completely close off your vision. There was a little bit down below you could see out. But I was very impressed with the immersion. And so, like for the night one, they let you... basically, like the triggers on the move controllers controls your hands opening and closing. So if you were released, your hands were open. So you could actually like reach over to your right and you would see sort of like an array of weapons. And then you would reach your hand out, close the press the button, close your hand on the sword, and then you'd have it in your hand. It was actually like it's amazing how easily your mind is tricked into thinking that. And then one of the other weapons you got was like a ball and chain, whatever you call that.
Morningstar.
Yeah, Morningstar. And I was really surprised at how my mind was tricked into expecting the weight of it as it was spinning around. So like right. My eyes would see it and then I would actually try to anticipate the weight on my hand. And of course it didn't ever came. There's no weight there. But it was very immersive in that regard, how your mind plays tricks on you immediately. So that was one aspect of it, which I was not expecting going into trying the demo. So from a technical aspect, the thing they don't quite have right, in my opinion, yet is the focal point. It's always, let's say, like 10 meters in front of you. So they had this archery thing where you pick up a crossbow and you're shooting at targets different distances away. So the one at 10 meters was crisp and clear. But as soon as you would look up to one that was sort of up top 20 meters away or so, that one was actually blurry. So they haven't quite figured out how to track your eyes or whatever they're going to do to try to fix that, where the field of vision or the depth of field will actually adjust.
Right.
Based on what you're looking at. Now that's probably a pretty tricky problem. I don't know if they'll be able to figure that out, but that was one thing that kind of pulled me out of the demo. Just know, as long as everything's in that sort of, you know, 10 meter sweet spot range where it's in focus, it looks awesome. It's very immersive. But as soon as you sort of start looking past that length, start looking at the backgrounds or, you know, trees in the distance, they stay blurry even when you focus on them with your eyes. So I don't know how these VR headsets are going to get around that aspect of it. Maybe we're just going to have to live with it for the first gen. But overall, I was very impressed with the technology in general. I thought it was really immersive. And yeah, just really surprised actually at how immersive it was. So I don't think you'll get that sort of experience from an AR headset, me personally. But if you're looking at it to take in media, I think it's better an AR headset would be. But if you're looking to have an immersive experience, I don't think you could beat the VR headsets.
So we got a believer over here, Frank.
Give me 1 second here.
So I don't know. I don't know. I don't think. I don't know if I would buy it right away. I think I'd wait to see how they, what they do in those regard, in the regards to like the field of the depth of field stuff, and like what kind of games will come out. But I know there's a lot of devs on the Sony side, and I see emails about the Morpheus dev kits and Morpheus SDKs, like from developing and getting the Sony emails. So, people are working on it. People are trying to make cool stuff. So hopefully in the near future, I don't know when the ship date is, but.
Well, I guess that's going to be the big question is who's going to be the first to market. Like, I would assume it's going to be Oculus.
Yeah,
but
I think so.
Weren't they supposed to maybe have something out by the end of last year for consumers?
I don't know what it was, but I think they're probably showing stuff at GDC right now. So we might see some news come out of GDC. Like, I know Valve and HTC just announced a new headset as well, a VR headset. So now there's sort of like Sony, Oculus, and Valve all in on it.
And there's also the Samsung VR gear, whatever they call it for their Android stuff. So lots of people trying to get into this market, but...
Well, I got a little something in my hands here.
What do you got, Frank?
And EA, what year is this? 1993. They might have stumbled on, accidentally, the intellectual property of a millennium. Once all this VR gear gets ready, they have the perfect title, the perfect game to bring back and reboot. Immersionary. This nice. Thing is amazing. Like, do I got... I don't know if you can see the background images on this, but it you would love it. It's like...
the title...
Is that a Sega CD cartridge?
This is 3DO.
Oh, 3DO.
The title and the font have me pretty interested. I can't really see the pictures, but...
This is like... Just look at this Chinese dude right here. Can you see that?
Yeah.
You gotta love that.
Oh, yeah.
This is all you.
I saw.
Think about it. Put together a pitch. Try to get the rights.
Speaking of games on the VR headsets, I think I read today that the obvious choice for a game, especially out of the Valve camp, Half-Life 3, exclusive to the headset.
That would be a big deal.
Which could be a seller. Could be a system seller.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say Doom for sure.
Well, I'm sure Doom's coming out on the Oculus. Carmack's probably going to do it himself.
Exactly.
Okay.
VR's bullshit. Who cares? Let's go.
So, anything else before we move on? No?
Don't think so.
Okay. Well, why don't we get into our top 10 games of 2014, which will probably be a little bit abbreviated just because, we're pretty late with this stuff and we'll kind of just bleed into our, other stuff we've been playing over the past few months. But, my list, we always give the standard disclaimers and, for me, it's always like, there's only a handful of games I even played. I generally only play games I think I'm going to be interested in. It's not like we're reviewing games for... It's not comparable to film junk, I guess, is the way I look at it, where at least we're like seeing a movie every week and trying to keep up to date with most of the important stuff. This is just kind of whatever we feel like playing, we're playing.
In film junk, we're pretty confident we've seen a lot of the argument.
Yeah.
Right? We've seen what we think would be probably a 90%, 95% sample of what the best stuff of the year was.
Right. Not quite the same here.
Yeah, well, my list, it's half a reflection of me, half a reflection of what I think are the best games. I basically broke it down to, I mean, I tried almost every game, I would say, or close to it. So these are the games I actually stuck with and played a lot. So how else can you make a top 10 list? If I sunk 30, 40 hours in a game, I must have liked it a little bit, huh?
Yep. I got a couple games that I would have liked to have tried also. We could probably do that after.
Why don't we...
A little disclaimer.
How do you want to do this? Why don't we just like individually read off our lists instead of going around and around?
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you want to give a little additional info about each one, you can. But Frank?
Lead us off.
All right. My number 10 is a tie.
Oh,
I'm going
geez,
with two games.
Guy. Let's just do our top 11 then.
The UbiArt framework, Child of Light and Valiant Hearts. Both. I love that engine. Love the games it produces. Love both of these games. Number 9, this is why I did a tie at 11. This game doesn't really count. Huck might have it too, but it came out technically the year before. But Rogue Legacy on PS4.
Oh, yeah. I don't have it, but it deserves to be out on this.
It's kind of a cheat, but I played like 40 to 50 hours of it. So to do my year list and not include it seems kind of dumb. Number 8, Captain Toad Treasure Tracker.
Nice.
Talk about a polished presentation. Absolutely love it. Number 7, Far Cry 4.
Nice.
Which I haven't played enough of, but very. I love it because it's colorful. I love the menus. A lot of the Ubisoft games, I've said it before, have similar feels, similar systems, and a general game loop, so to speak. But I think Far Cry was my favorite of those this year, and visually was my favorite by far. In particular, the use of color and animals.
That grizzly bear at the beginning? Hello.
Yeah. Number 6, Sunset Overdrive. Actually kind of low, considering how much I played it. I really enjoyed it. Mechanics and stuff, but I got to be honest. Some of the systems were not quite what I thought they would be. Felt a little underdeveloped, and the tone of the game generally wasn't crazy about. It seems to be one of the more divisive aspects of the game, and I don't hate it, but I'm really not a fan. Number 5 for me, and what might be the most underrated, maybe least talked about game that I think is going to gain a lot of steam, Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare.
Oh, yeah.
Sunk a lot of hours into this one. It is just a refreshing, different take on those kind of games. Cool characters, awesome visuals, fun to play. Love that game. Number 4 for me, Forza Horizon 2. Was really surprised by this game. Had not played their first Forza Horizon. And the setups and the canned events, the bucket list moments, I think are an awesome addition to a car game. Amazing presentation. Really good. Really good game. And I think it's been slated as well. Number 3, sunk a lot of time into this baby. A lot of hours. No surprise, Geometry Wars 3, which kind of went under the radar. It was
sure did.
Talked about quite a bit before it came out, but I love it. I like it just as much as the previous two in the series, and my playtime reflects that. Number 2, Mario Kart 8. For me, the visuals in high def, taking Mario Kart to another level, really cool track design, awesome DLC, great, great game. And number 1, and it really wasn't close, and I feel like this game has also kind of gotten the shaft this year, Infamous Second Son.
Wow.
For me, it was easily the best-paced game, the best mechanics, the best pacing of getting powers, cramming so much into a game, getting more and more fun as you played it, a game that as soon as I beat it, I played it again right from the start on a different difficulty and played it from another perspective. I really thought Infamous Second Son was by far the best game I played all year.
Wow. We're going to have drastically different lists. I only have two of the games you have.
It was a shit year for games. What do you want me to do, man?
Well, yeah, a lot of stuff delayed, a lot of...
I feel like my number one might have come out last year.
Uh-oh.
Whoops.
All right, well, give it to us, Huxley.
Okay, number 10, Banner Saga. Now, I know this game came out, like, last year on iOS and stuff, but it came out in January of 2014 on PC, which is where I played it. And you can check out my one and two parts of my Banner Saga playthrough on our Game Junk YouTube page. I did another one just a couple weeks ago. Really good strategy game. Really colorful. Colorful like Frank, you know. And yeah, like it a lot. Number 9, Infamous Second Son. This game I really liked a lot, but it had just too many infamous things I don't like. You know, that float. I don't like the floaty jump. There was a lot of little things that just... The combat I found, I didn't really like that much. You know, it was just like the typical stuff that's a carryover from all the previous Infamous games. Some people love. I'm not one of those people. Number 8, Dragon Age Inquisition. I haven't played that much of this game, but I can tell it's much more like Dragon Age 1 than the other games. And I'm really enjoying it so far. There's a lot to do and a little overwhelming at times, but overall pretty solid game so far. Number 7, Wolfenstein: The New Order, which was a great little shooter that came out. It might be flying under the radar for most people, but good shooter, good storytelling. It's is it Starbreeze, the guys who did like the Riddick games and stuff,
right?
They craft a great game, and they keep... there's like always stuff going on that keeps you engaged. Number 6 is Valiant Hearts. Played this game around Remembrance Day this year. Perfect time for this game. Like Frank was saying, love the art.
How long is this game, out of curiosity?
5-6 hours, maybe?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Yeah, pretty short.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm looking forward to checking it out on PS4.
Oh, yeah, PS Plus. Number 5, FIFA 2015. I had not played a FIFA game since FIFA 09.
Wow.
And I borrowed this from the old library. And boy, this game is incredible. I can't believe how far like the FIFA games have improved everything. It's just amazing. The gameplay's great. I'm not that big of a soccer guy / football guy. And I really enjoyed it. Number 4, Sherlock Holmes: Crimes and Punishments.
So this game's actually good.
I liked it. I liked it a lot, yeah.
I mean, I feel like there's a lot of Sherlock Holmes games that come out that are just kind of these weird budget... because it's like a license that you don't have to pay for, right? Because it's public domain to use Sherlock Holmes.
I don't know. I think the company that made it has done a lot in the past, and they sort of stepped up. The graphics are better. I played it on PS4. And the gameplay is good. You know, they have this sort of like clue system, and some of the puzzles are pretty fun, but nothing's like overly complex where you're getting frustrated. So it kind of has that perfect balance of challenging yet never too hard, to the point where you need to like go look at a guide all the time. And, you know, it also does a good job of kind of leading you to the right spots you need to go, so you're never kind of lost wandering aimlessly. They keep everything kind of like self-contained into one or two areas, and then you kind of move on to a new case kind of thing. Number 3, Trials Fusion. I got like super addicted to this game. This is the first Trials game I'd ever played. Actually, I think I played it after the episode we had the Pixel Knox guys on.
Yeah.
So that's like 2 or 3 episodes ago. Chris was mentioning it, and...
it's just like his favorite game of all time, the Trials
series. It's so fun. There's like such a nuanced controls to how you need to like angle your bike and hit the ramps just at the right speed and angle. It's just such a great game. I tried to play it on one of the streams I did, and I realized it really doesn't come across by watching it, like what the game is all about, because I died like 10 times in a row. But it's really all about just getting it just perfectly, just right, adjusting your controls. And just great gameplay. My number 2, Velocity 2X, which is a game I think came out on PS Plus a couple months ago. And this game I just loved. I never played the original one, but the way they blend sort of like the shooter with the like platforming shooter, I don't know, gameplay is really well done. The story I didn't really follow at all, but you know, the little puzzles and all the little mechanics of like time warping and stuff were really fun.
I played a little bit of it. I feel like if I played it more, it could have been on my list, because it is really like, you know, you talk about the idea of like designing a game where you, I guess the concept of flow, as some of our former employees used to talk about quite a bit. This game like sums that up perfectly, because you get into that zone where you're just like reacting to stuff and you're so absorbed in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought that was a really unique, like, jumping between sort of 2D side scroller platformer stuff and then the shooter stuff. Like, it worked. It's not something I would have thought to do, but
they also have sort of like, not challenges, but sort of like grades at the end of each level, and you get experience based on how well you did. So let's say, like, you know, a star rating out of 4 or something like that. So 4 to 4, you get 101, you get 25 or something. And you need a lot of experience to unlock the final couple levels.
Okay.
So at a certain point, maybe like level 40 or 50 or something like that, if you didn't do very well, you kind of get forced back, or at least I got forced back into doing some of the levels over again. And I think it was just the right, maybe a little too much, but it was a really good amount of having to replay to continue on. I didn't get like overwhelmed by how much I had to get to move on. So you can kind of go back and try to master your skills in the beginning areas. Right. And I thought that worked really well. And then my number one, South Park, The Stick of Truth.
Nice.
Did it come out this year? Am I crazy? I'm pretty sure it did, right?
I think it did. I feel like
it came out in March, I thought.
I feel like it was on a bunch of lists for 2014.
Oh, was it? Okay, perfect. Yes, number one, great humor, love South Park, captured the game perfectly. Number one, by far, by a landslide.
Wow. Hardcore.
Yep.
Last gen, not interested.
March 2014 it came out.
Booyah.
So there you go. All right.
Actually, you know what? I just want to do a couple honorable mentions.
Sure.
That one game that I just recently played, I don't even know if it's this year, Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes, was that this year?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. So that...
You mean
game,
last year?
Last year, 2014. That game is incredible. I think I was talking to you guys a bit about it, and it would have made my list probably if it was actually a full game.
Well, I guess
it's so short.
That's the endless debate over that game. But
yeah, so that game, Childlike Light, I played a bit. Shadows of Mordor, which we have not talked about at all, I played that a bit, but it didn't really grab me. It seemed to be, you know, one or two on almost everyone's list I was seeing, and it didn't really capture me. Kind of going through this list, and then there was a bunch of games that you guys probably have never played that I wanted to play. The War of Mine. Have you guys heard of this game?
No.
Vanishing Ethan Carter. Vanishing of Ethan Carter.
I've heard of it.
Divinity Original Sin.
No.
Oh. The Game of Thrones Telltale game. And then Call of Duty Advanced Warfighter. I wanted to play all those, but I never got around to it.
Right.
Most of those are PC games.
I can say, I mean, I've been wanting to get to Shadow of Mordor, but I haven't got around to it. So it's not on my list, but I feel like it could have been. I mean, Frank, did you put any time into that game or no?
Yeah, I think I put about 7 or 8 hours. I liked it. It's not incredibly original. It's well put together. The thing a lot of people seem to like about it was the enemy system.
Nemesis, I think.
The ranks. Yeah, and I actually wasn't crazy about it, and I found it the difficulty overbearing at times, and maybe it's just the way I lean towards exploration over progressing through the story, because I've heard, oh, you can brand guys, and then it makes all that stuff easier, and I haven't got to that. I've just been exploring more, so I will go back and play it again. I will say Dragon Age Inquisition, I started playing for about 2 hours. This game, I think, was number one on a lot of lists.
Yeah, it was, I think.
and I want to play it more, but it is buggy as shit.
Oh, really?
Like, I played it for 2 hours. It crashed on me once. It, like, broke another time. I tried rebooting it. I couldn't even enter the start game menu. Then I went back into it again, and the game was broken. I couldn't level up my character, and I could do nothing in the game. So, you know what? I said, fuck this game.
Huh. I haven't seen any of that.
No one ever talks about how broken and shitty that game is.
Yeah, I played it for
pisses me off.
Maybe 3 or 4 hours. I haven't seen any of that stuff. Apart from maybe some like crappy AI that gets stuck in stupid spots.
Yet another game that's, oh, such a good value. So much to do. Fuck value.
Uh-huh. Wait, what system did you say you were playing it on? Xbone?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm playing on PS4. That's why. Sony.
Weird.
I don't know. They're probably the same.
All right, so let me just whip through this list, which, you know, I'll say I'm not super crazy about my list, but, you know, these are the games I played, basically. number 10, this one, you know, I'm going to throw out right now. I barely played it at all, with the exception of today, playing it at one of Frank's little get-togethers and one of our live streams, which is Towerfall Ascension. And playing it there was enough to make my list because it was definitely one of the most fun I've had with the game this year.
Because you only played 10 games this year.
Well, that's definitely a factor as well. But I was very impressed by it, and I would like to see... I mean, it seems like there are games coming out, like that IDARB game, or however you pronounce it, IDARB.
IDARB is fucking amazing.
Yeah, like it... Stuff like that where it's kind of these weird indie games, but they're tailored just for like a crazy frenetic multiplayer experience.
If IDARB came out this year, it would have been number 2 on my list.
We got to play. There is a online multiplayer for that, eh?
Oh, yeah?
I think so.
Let's do it. I will destroy you.
Play. Well, we can talk about that maybe in a minute, but... number 9, sneaking into my list was Child of Light, which I, started playing just, like a couple months ago and, was actually like, I don't know why I kind of shied away from it initially. Cause I thought, I don't know, RPGs and me sometimes, you know, if it's too time consuming or if it's too like technical, I tune out. But obviously, like as Frank mentioned, the Ubisoft art, the Ubi art games are always beautiful to look at. And I thought it was actually fairly accessible, at least initially. And the story was kind of intriguing. I had read in some reviews people talking about how the rhyming dialogue kind of got on their nerves a bit. And I kind of agree with that. But I don't know. That was the only real complaint I had about the game. And
sure, it's better than any Paper Mario game you would ever play.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably a good comparison, but you know, it's kind of its own thing. It's pretty unique. So, number 8, Shovel Knight.
Oh, yeah.
Another little...
I'm assuming this is the game you're going to complain about load times on?
No.
Oh.
Well, I played this for the 3DS, so I haven't played it on the Wii U.
I heard that game's but like really good controls and everything.
It is. I mean, like I think I talked about it on the show at some point, and you know, my love-hate relationship with it is that it is definitely an old school NES difficulty type game, but it is one that if you kind of go back to a level a few times and you start to learn the enemy patterns and stuff, you really do like, you know, your initial playthrough, like of a level, you're thinking, why are there no save points? Why are there not more? I mean, there are a couple checkpoints, but it feels like there should be more. But then once you kind of understand that level and you know it really well, you can, you know, breeze through it in like 2 minutes. So it's kind of one of those games where it does reward, you know, going back to it and getting better at it. Of course, you know, I probably have not put enough time into it to truly do that, but it is something that kind of just takes bits and pieces of classic NES games and kind of mashes them all together to make something pretty fun and familiar but original. So I enjoyed it. Number 7, this one, as with you guys, I had one on my list that technically probably not a 2014 game because it did come out I think, on Steam in 2013, but it was out on PS4 and Vita 2014, The Swapper, which I got pretty hooked on. And, you know, it is definitely a Metroid-esque game, but, you know, it's a Metroid kind of game with very little, like, there's no real combat. It's just puzzle solving, and it's got sort of portally kind of vibes throughout it. And I like the story. I thought that there was kind of an interesting sci-fi story being told there, and the visuals were kind of interesting too. You played this a bit, right?
Yeah, I beat it. Yeah.
So yeah, like that. What number am I on? Number six. Number six, got to throw in an iOS game. I'm going with Monument Valley, which is fantastic, except it's kind of short. But as we have established here, value means nothing to us. but it's a beautiful game, and it's kind of, you know, the idea of these, like, you know, Escher-esque kind of environments that you can manipulate and maneuver through. And it is kind of similar to Captain Toad, which I'm not sure which came first in terms of Monument Valley or the Captain Toad levels in Super Mario 3D World. But either way, it's pretty solid and deserves to be on the list, I think. Number five, Frank, Mario Kart 8.
Booyah.
Have not had a Mario Kart game on any list of mine in quite a while, and this one brought me back to Mario Kart. And obviously, I think I picked up a Wii U and around the time that this game came out, and I just kind of felt like obligated, like, oh, okay, it's the big game that's out right now. I guess I should pick this up. But I wasn't really looking forward to it. But it really, I can't put my finger on what it is. And, you know, even the battle mode, as we've talked about, is kind of busted, and I haven't really even played it. But the assortment of tracks that they have, the fact that they added additional DLC, which is all great stuff, I don't know. I've played quite a bit of it and had a lot of fun with it.
Imagine if battle mode was good. Oh, my God.
I know. I guess they got to save something for the next one. number four, Jazz Punk. Got to go with a little bit of a strange indie game that I played this year and enjoyed quite a bit. It's kind of a, I don't know how to describe it. It's like it's a spy game. It's kind of a puzzle adventure game, but it's first person perspective. The graphics are kind of shitty, but it's got this really strange sense of humor and sensibility to it. And I think, I could be wrong on this, but I think it's published by Adult Swim Games, which kind of sums up the sense of humor and sort of the style of it, if you can imagine that. So I think it's only available for PC, so check it out if you can. Number three, Captain Toad. Really enjoyed this one. Just, you know, as much as I kind of had been ranting about Nintendo over the past year or so, feeling like they're just regurgitating stuff, this felt like, you know, a new original Nintendo game, and I really liked it. It's just a fun...
Sean?
Frank?
Is this Kieran's list or your list? Come on, you're like a softy.
I'm not gonna... Like, I mean, that... I had fun playing it with Kieran, but I mean, truth be told, he kind of just sat and watched me play for the most part. I mean, like, there's interactive stuff on the touchscreen that he would do and you know, whatever. But yeah, I mean, I just it's a solid puzzle game, and I just thought, you know, like, Nintendo, their level design is always second to none. So I really enjoyed it. Number two, gonna maybe disagree with you a little bit, Frank, although I haven't finished the game, Sunset Overdrive. Thought it was fantastic, everything I've played so far.
Wow, so this is gonna be really interesting, because by powers of deduction, I know your number one game, and I think it will lead to a very interesting discussion afterwards. So
yes, but yes, Sunset Overdrive, you know, like, the story and kind of the, I don't know, like, I assume the thing that turned you off is kind of that, like, punk rock attitude or whatever that it has. And I mean, it is a little bit immature.
Slightly pandering at times.
Yeah, it is a little bit immature and stuff, but I felt like there was still a quality behind it all. Like, it wasn't just, I don't know, like the cinematics and stuff, I thought they embraced that and worked with it. And I thought the story, as kind of ridiculous as the story is, worked as well within those kind of that kind of tone. Hard to explain. I don't know, whatever reason it worked for me. And it's
get your number one.
It's gameplay above all else, really, for that game. And
because I think it's really interesting.
Number one,
the two games,
Infamous Second Son.
Boom. Yeah. How similar are Infamous Second Son and Sunset Overdrive?
Pretty similar.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, but I mean,
you
like,
guys are
like
crazy.
The same kind of attitude, very intense locomotion systems that like free you in a. Like a sandbox environment.
Sluggish combat.
Combat's very similar. Like shooting / melee. There's the whole like spray painting punk idea is in both.
Yep.
I don't know. They just feel grinding. All this stuff. Like they feel really similar to me. I was surprised at...
But one worked more for you than the other, obviously.
Yeah, I felt like the amp system and... Like some of the other power-up systems in Sunset Overdrive were cumbersome and really didn't lead to a whole lot. Like buying amps from that guy, you end up buying like 10 amps. Half of them are just having an announcer and other superficial stuff. I really didn't feel like they added power. And there was really only 4 or 5 guns that I really liked. And I know at times Sunset Overdrive felt like a bit more of a chore than Second Son. And it's just kind of the nature of the narrative, I think.
Okay. As far as Infamous goes, I mean, it's a fairly short game. I think we've talked about it a bit. I think it is a little bit that it's a weaker year. I don't know that it would be my number one, you know, if there was a lot of great AAA stuff out there. But, like, I thought... The presentation was fantastic. I thought the motion capture and the vocal performances, all that stuff were great, better than expected for this kind of game. And, you know, the story's nothing to write home about, but it was enough that, I don't know, I was never really bored during it. So Huck City, you're saying that you weren't a big fan of the combat though in general?
Yeah, I found like a lot of times I would want to be moving right, but I would be stuck in some animation kind of going to the left, and then I would get hit and then I'd get fly back, and I was hoping for a little more responsiveness, but that's been an Infamous thing since Infamous 1, so I wasn't surprised by it. I was expecting it going in. Same with the floaty jumping and grabbing onto weird shit you don't expect to grab onto. I was expecting all that, and that stuff drove me nuts, which is why it's lower on my list. But I still enjoyed the game. But that sort of stuff, I had to just kind of, like, you know.
The only time that really bothered me, I think, is there's a part where you're climbing a tower.
There's two parts that I remember. The Seattle Needle.
Yeah.
And the End Tower. There's some situations where you need to do that.
Right.
And you start, like, floating up and then attaching the shit and where you don't want to go, and just drives me nuts.
The worst mechanic in the game, if my memory serves, is the going over smoke vents.
Right.
Like ones that are like...
The ones that launch you or whatever?
Essentially. Yeah. That one's not very good. Other than that, locomotion is an absolute joy in that game.
Yeah, I did like the... was it the neon power? Not the neon powers. The TV.
Digital.
The digital powers. Those were fun.
Yeah, it is.
Gotta go digital.
The only thing about that game I found is that the upgrades, like, so I found a lot of the blast shards or whatever, and I was able to upgrade a lot of my stuff, and it was kind of like I was getting all this stuff, but I wasn't really seeing it in game other than like the major things. I felt like I was buying all this stuff and then not really seeing it, you know, take form in the game. I'm sure it was there, but it just wasn't obvious. As, you know, some other games might make it more prevalent.
Well, I think it's just that you unlock a power and then you have that power. And then generally you're just, you know, adding more ammo.
You're just kind of buffing it up.
Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. It's like I hadn't played. I played a little bit of Infamous 1 and, like, I don't know if I even played any of Infamous 2. But yeah, I was kind of surprised. And I do feel like this game, I mean, I certainly didn't see it on very many lists for this year, so I think...
I was actually surprised by that. I thought it would be higher.
Like, you know, I remember we talked a lot because this came out around when Titanfall came out, and it was like those were the two releases for PS4 and Xbox One. And Titanfall, I mean, I don't
also
know.
Also nowhere on lists.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like that got more respect than this game, which is crazy. But I don't know.
I thought they both kind of didn't come back in the end.
Maybe.
Okay.
Was there any other big games that we just didn't play that people are going to be like, what the fuck, you guys are idiots?
Well, I, like I said, I played
Assassin's Creed Unity.
Dragon Age. I played Unity. I actually was enjoying
Alien
Unity.
Alien Isolation?
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Sean played that.
I played a little bit of it. Did you play any of it, Hawk City?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
I'm guessing you played more than me, because I didn't even get to the fucking alien.
okay, yeah, you didn't play very much then. I didn't get that much further than that, but I did get to see the alien, yeah.
I mean...
I played Destiny, which probably would have been number 11 or 12 for me.
I played half an hour of the trial, or the demo of Destiny, which is probably nothing.
Yeah, I guess that one's probably... I imagine for some people it could be number one, and some people it would not even come close to their lists. But, all right, well, let's get into other stuff we played then that, you know, wasn't on our lists or for whatever reason. Did you have more to say about Alien Isolation? Because I'm kind of curious. Like, I picked up the game mostly because I was I'm an Alien fan, and I had heard that it was really, like, the attention to detail was amazing, and I agree with that.
Yeah, the atmosphere was really good.
Yeah, but I just don't know if it's my kind of game, you know, because it seems like it's a fairly long game. And while I like the idea of there being one alien and you kind of never really being able to kill it, just kind of, you know, making it go away for a period of time or whatever, I don't know if that would be frustrating in the long run for me.
Yeah, I didn't play very much. I only played maybe 2 or 3 hours. And it got pretty intense, which really wasn't what I was looking for at the time. But definitely they nailed the atmosphere of the game. They really, like, brought the tension when the alien did come around. It got to the... Like, I think I heard it was, like, a 20-hour game, which seems insane to me for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I feel like maybe it's just going to stretch it out. I have no real desire to go back and play anymore. The one thing, okay, just to go on a little tangent here, what's with next gen games and this trend of not being able to pause cutscenes? I don't know. I noticed it in Alien Isolation, Far Cry 4. I think Assassin's Creed Unity had this problem. I try hitting the options button. I try touching the touchpad on the PS4. I tried pressing every button.
I feel like I talked to somebody about this, but was it
maybe
you?
I brought it up last show.
I don't know, maybe. Yeah.
But it's been driving
me nuts.
I think
if you go to the home screen for any game, it will pause it.
Oh, I don't know. I feel like maybe that wasn't working for Far Cry 4 in particular.
And maybe that's why people don't implement it, because somehow
they assume it'll just work.
The system implements that type of functionality.
I know X-Bone definitely does that. Because I was always surprised, like, if I was playing a game and I would quit and come back and it would, like, just pick up, like, the second where I was.
I don't know. I don't like this taking a step back.
How good is that feature, by the way?
It's pretty cool. I like it.
What, the suspend?
Yeah.
I got a little inside baseball. Sony's is coming out soon.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they advertised it at fucking E3 when they announced the PS4. How long has it been?
Well,
these guys are jokers. You want to call that anyone pathological liars? Look them up. Like, give me a break.
All right, well, anyways. But I think we all bitched on the Metroid Other M episode about not being able to skip the cutscenes.
Right.
And, like, what the hell, we're in 2012 or whatever year it was we did that review. Well, it's now 2015. We're in the next gen, or the next gen on top of Wii. And, like, what the hell is this, not being able to, one, pause cutscenes, and two, not skip cutscenes?
They don't want you to miss the story, man. You need to know that story info to progress in the game.
I don't. I really don't. I don't know. It just seems like something that should be required.
I mean, it's weird because I mean, that's an interesting question. Do you guys skip cutscenes often? Because I rarely do. I just feel obligated, like, okay, I need to watch this. This is going to be important. And sometimes it's the worst because, yeah, you might want to leave in the middle of it or you just
get bored.
I
don't usually
skip,
but I pause. Like, I started Far Cry 4 and there was a big cutscene right at the beginning. And I don't know, my baby started crying or something. And I couldn't pause the goddamn thing. I tried that home thing, and I'm pretty sure it like kept running while I was gone.
Yeah.
So I don't know what was going on. Anyways, total side tangent. Alien Isolation. Yeah.
I can't even remember the last time I skipped a cutscene.
Wow.
Maybe when I was 7.
Hardcore over there.
Yeah, big time. Yeah. So Alien Isolation was good. I mean, I enjoyed what I played, but I don't want to go back and play anymore. What I got was good little taste.
Yeah.
If I want to like experience that again, I'll go watch Alien or something like that.
It just seems like something where if I'm going to sit down and play it, I have to set aside a whole night. You know, it's not something you're just going to play in like 15-minute installments.
Yeah, I think I played 2 kind of like hour and a half runs, and that was kind of like enough. I got kind of my fill.
Right.
What else have you been playing?
I don't know, Frank, you got something?
I'll just blow through mine, essentially. I bought the Resident Evil HD remaster.
Beautiful.
Which I was enjoying quite a bit. Forgot how hard that game is. Man, it is frustrating at times, but still a nice nostalgic trip down memory lane.
Did you pick up Revelations 2 yet?
Yes, I did. I played it for a couple hours, and it was pretty good. Nothing amazing, but some good Resident Evil fun. I would like to give a shout-out to the game Threes, the puzzle game, which I thoroughly enjoy. It's uber-polished and a ton of fun, which I would highly recommend on Xbox One or iOS. I think I started talking about Unity before we cut out a bit, but... Yeah. I was enjoying it. The one thing they added, which I really like, is a descend mechanic. So you know how you would hold the left trigger and A to ascend stuff? Now you can do controlled descend with trigger and B, which is really good.
Was it buggy for you, or is it patched now enough to the point where it's not a problem?
I played it right when it came out. I'm trying to remember if I stopped playing because I had a bug, but for the most part, didn't have any issues.
I had issues when I played. The first mission, I couldn't trigger. So I was running around the city, and they have like the little way marker where you're supposed to go to trigger the scene, and the little like pillar of light or whatever that's supposed to appear to let you continue on never appeared for me. So I had to run around the city and then restart the game, and eventually it showed up if I stayed in that area for like a couple minutes. But that happened multiple times. It wasn't just the one time. And a lot of like, I don't know, not many other technical issues other than that I saw. Just some design issues, like the first place you start, there's treasure chests you can't open, and you need to like buy Ubisoft points or unlock certain things that are like in multiplayer only. And I just felt like that was a really weird way to start out the game. Like, why not just put that, you know, a few missions down the road, start introducing that later. I don't know why they had to throw it, like, right in your face right away.
Yeah.
But that was really... I didn't play that much. I kind of got frustrated with not being able to start missions. So, I stopped playing.
Right.
I'll just... iDarb, which I said, which is actually... probably the most fun multiplayer game I've played in a long time.
Can you verify that that's actually how you pronounce it, Frank?
Pretty sure
it's iDarb.
Pretty sure it is, yeah.
There's a song at the beginning of the game that says, iDarb. It's iDarb.
All right, fair enough.
Love that game. They've essentially invented a new hybrid sport, video game sport. And
yeah, I mean, like it reminded me like of the days...
Half NBA Jam.
Yeah,
ice hockey.
But it's like, it's from the days of, you know, like the NES era where, you know, you came up with a sports game, but it wasn't about getting the license. It was about coming up with some weird spin, like Bill Laimbeer Combat Basketball or some shit like that. And I don't know if there's more to it than what I played, but like essentially you're just trying to get a ball from one end to the other.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much you played, but I'm sure that there's more to it than what you think there is.
Okay, cool.
Is this like Frog Fractions?
Just fucking with you, man. Relax. Like, holy, look at this.
No, I'm excited. I hope there is more to it, but like I played like half an hour of it just single player.
It's cool to play multiplayer too, like two people on a team. There's passing, which I've played mostly one-on-one, so it's tough to say. Great game, though.
I love the little, like every time you score, they just have like random sort of like announcer quotes, but they're so ridiculous.
Yeah, I hate that.
Didn't I? So how do you play
you know
this
I would
game?
Hate that. If there's anything I would hate in that game, well, that's of course, the one thing I would.
Yeah. How do you play this game? I've heard of this game, but I still don't know. Is it just browser?
No, it's
it's Xbox One.
X-Bone, maybe.
Oh, I see. And I heard there's like Twitter integration or Twitch integration where you can like affect the gameplay.
I don't know about this, Frank.
On the fly?
Yeah.
With like the hashtag.
Yeah, both
crap.
Twitter, heavy Twitter component and Twitch. I haven't really been affected by Twitch, but there's...
Our next live stream definitely needs to have some iDarb in it.
Yeah, let's do it.
I agree. And it has to have the next game I'm going to talk about, which I'm surprised I haven't heard anything about, which is the Jack in the Box Party on Xbox One.
I've never even heard of
it. Which is like an amazing party game in its own right. Anyone who's in the room that has a smartphone can connect through a browser and play. Fibbage is so good. You don't know Jack is okay, but the real star of it is Drawsome. And it's a drawing game where...
It's like draw
the things
something.
You're drawing are ridiculous. There's a fibbage aspect to it where you can put fake answers as to what they were drawing, and if other people pick your answer, you get points. I mean, if there's any game other than iDarb I want to get a bunch of people over to play, it's that. And then there's another game which supports up to 100 people in a room for like big rooms of stuff, so I'd love to... get a nice big group over doing that. It would be I think the drawing game for a live stream would be hilarious.
Oh, I'm pretty down for this.
I think it would be really good.
This is only available for Xbox One as well, or is it on other platforms?
I'm not 100% sure, to be honest. So
okay, cool.
But that game is fantastic. Volgar the Viking, which I hated at first because it was super hard, but grew to love.
Never even heard of that.
Still very hard. It's like a platformer combat game that is extremely difficult, and you essentially have to master the levels. It's kind of roguelike, but not really RPG elements. More of a old school roguelike. And I think that's all I really want to talk about.
What about Evolve? Do you want to talk about that at all?
I haven't played enough. I did the tutorial.
As did I.
wasn't blown away by the tutorial.
I will say, you know, I threw it in today because I thought, well, I'll try and get like, you know, a couple hours in, be able to talk about it. And it just took fucking forever to install, to download the patches. Like this is the world we live in now. I'm not a fan of it.
It's the digital era. Embrace it. Get that game in. Go make a sandwich. Come back later. You got to be thinking three steps ahead, bro.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, I guess just based on what I played, which is, you know, in the tutorial, you're basically just playing as the monster. It was actually a lot of fun. Like, it seemed like it was, from what I could tell, extremely well-balanced, you know? Like, you feel powerful as the monster, but you definitely, there's weakness there, and you can see where... you know, the hunters kind of have certain advantages over you, and I can only imagine it would be great multiplayer fun.
Well, as far as I know, it came from an offshoot studio from members of the team that made Left 4 Dead.
Right.
And what it's missing, as far as I can tell, is the single player aspect to Left 4 Dead. You can play Left 4 Dead by yourself, with friends. It had that awesome kind of mini movie feel to stuff, so...
Yeah.
I don't get that vibe yet. Like I said, it's early, but I can't believe more people haven't copied that structure for co-op games. It was perfect.
Yeah, I've read some stuff that that Evolve is actually pretty decent as a single player game as well, but I can't totally vouch for that yet. I mean, if I'm playing it, I'm guessing I probably will play more single player than multiplayer, but hey, that's just me. But I, you know, the weird thing is it hadn't even occurred to me how much this thing is drawing from Predator either. I don't know why I never thought of it in the lead up to the release of the game, but playing it, it's like, yeah, it's so obvious that's what they're drawing from, but it's fun. Okay, Huck City, you got some stuff?
Yeah, I played NHL 15, and...
Wasn't on your list, I noticed.
No, it definitely was not on my list. So it dropped the two main modes that I play the most, which was online GM mode and the EASHL, which is like you pick a player and then you play online, or you play a position, you play online. Both of those were not present in the game.
Hmm.
I also found that despite it looking really well, there are a lot of gameplay issues. I found the passing's really off. Like, I'll be trying to drop a pass or even just pass the puck, you know, just to my right, and it'll go to some other guy really far away and off.
Oh, that's been there for the last four games.
I know, but then also, like, one of the things I was really hoping to see was just kind of, like, situational awareness of the AI, of your own team. And there'll be cases where I'll be breaking out on the boards, and my guy is there, and then all of a sudden he just like pieces off into the middle of the ice and gives me no outlet to pass it. And I have to like circle back, like just little things like that drive me nuts. Passing from like the D up to wingers. It seems like if you pass it behind them, like as if they need to turn around, it's almost like they have like gimbal lock. Like they need to do this full circle to kind of get back to where they need to go. They can't just like turn to the left. It's like they're Zoolander. You know, you can't turn left or whatever it is. It's like they need to do a full circle one way to get the puck, and then they miss it, and then it goes for icing. It's the weirdest thing. There's just like all these little tiny bugs that just kind of add up to be a little more frustrating than it needs to be. Mm-hmm. The hitting's pretty good. Having, you know, guys, having more people being able to be in the physics is fun, but yeah, they got a lot of work to do on the next year, and I don't know. Hopefully they can recover and put in those modes. I played a little bit of Secret Ponchos, which came out a couple months ago now. Fun little spaghetti western shoot 'em up multiplayer game on PS4. Pretty fun, actually. I played a few rounds, and I haven't gone back to it, but I was having fun when I did. It seemed like they had some nice balanced characters in it.
Yeah, I still got to try that.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I saw they just had a patch too. I don't know what they're patching in, but I played Resogun because I got a PS4, so I was trying to get through all my kind of like 2014 backlog games. Resogun, definitely fun. Didn't really dive in as much as I know Frank really loved that game. Rollers of the Realm I played, which I don't think we've talked about on the show really too much.
I talked about it a bit last show, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I've played it too.
Yeah, it came out by friends at Phantom Compass. It's like a pinball RPG thing. Yeah, we did talk about it a bit last show. And yeah, really enjoying it. Went back to it a couple days ago. Was playing it for a bit. Yeah, they just got, you know, it's just a fun little pinball, like twist on pinball. I really like it.
Yeah, I'm kind of like the company that makes that works where I am too, right? So I know them all, and I mean, I'm kind of surrounded by the game, so it's easy for me to forget about it too in a way. But the thing that I didn't play it that much before it came out, like just here and there, I would kind of see what they were doing. But the thing I was most impressed by with it was the polish level. Like,
yeah,
the voice acting, all the setups, the main, like, it's easy for on indie games for that stuff to kind of get pushed aside. I thought it was a really well-polished game. I obviously haven't played it as much as I'd like, but I did like what little I played.
Yeah, yeah. I played a game called Lords of the Fallen. You guys heard of this game?
No.
I have.
It's like a third-person, almost like dungeon crawler game, and I really liked it when I first booted it up. Had a great atmosphere, looked really nice on the PS4, but it just had really tight corridors with camera issues, and the camera was causing me to miss attacks, and I wasn't able to connect with the enemies, and I just got really frustrated, like, right away. And I really wanted to like this game, but the frustration level right at the beginning was just too much, and I wasn't even, you know, anywhere in the game.
Right.
So I really didn't play it for that long. And, you know, when you can't hit enemies, it really doesn't make for a fun game. Let's see what else I played. Oh, I tried PlayStation Now. I don't know if anyone else has tried it. But I tried... What did I try on it? I tried XCOM Enemy Within, Hot Shots Golf, International Tour or something, Tokyo Jungle, Lego Batman 2, God of War Ascension, and Alpha Protocol. I tried all those games on it. And overall, I was actually pretty impressed with it. When I first signed on, there was a little bit of lag, and like an action game like God of War was just a little too laggy to play. But I played it another time in like the afternoon, where the load on the servers was probably a lot lower, and it was pretty good. It was basically 1-to-1. Alpha Protocol I had no problems with, and same with like Hot Shots Golf and stuff.
So this is a service that gives you access to like PS2 and PS1 games?
Not many PS1 games.
Okay.
It seems mostly just PS2 right now. And it looks...
PS3.
PS3 games. That's right. Okay. Sorry. Yeah, PS3.
And so it's essentially streaming these games to you.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, so you pay... There was a 7-day trial. Anyone can do it right now. Although watch out, because I canceled... It's like an automatic renewal. And even though I canceled it the day before it got renewed, it's still renewed on my credit card. I had to call up Sony and complain and get them to take the charge off. So, yeah, that was kind of a pain. But overall, I think the technology is there or really close to there, but the library that they're offering just isn't worth paying, you know, $45 for 3 months or whatever it is. It looks like there's other games. So there's like, it looks like there's two sort of like models to it. There's like the pay a monthly subscription and get a certain library of games free, like with your subscription. But then you could also rent games. And you can rent, you know, PS1 games and other PS2, PS3 games that are probably more considered premium titles or whatever.
Okay.
But there are additional charges for like a certain period you rent it for. So that was kind of confusing to me as to why they would do that. But whatever, I didn't rent anything. And I wouldn't. And the library, even with those rental games, was not enough to convince me to pay the amount. So I don't know, I'd say people should check it out, but I would say it's probably not going to be worth the investment right now. Maybe if they improve the library of games, but right now it's a little sparse.
It seems like this is the thing that Nintendo needs to have, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Streaming access to like all of the old NES games or something. But,
yeah.
But they'll never do it because they're making too much money selling them individually.
Yeah, $10 a pop. Guys like you keep buying them. Played a shit ton of Rogue Legacy. That game is just so good. I got it when it went free on PS Plus. So I played it. I was playing it on Steam before. So now I'm one trophy away from a platinum on PS4. I'll be working towards that. And I played a game called Titans Attack. Have you guys seen this? It was free on PS Plus again, like a couple months ago. It's basically not Asteroids. It's one of those other old games. Missile Command kind of thing. Or Space Invaders. That's what I'm thinking of. Space Invaders. But they add little twists where you can like upgrade your ships, and they have different enemy types. And it's basically just Space Invaders. But I played the shit out of it. They have like different worlds with different enemies and different hazards and things.
Was this
really
like a
fun
PS Mini or something? Or is it a...
No, I think it was just like a normal PSN only download title. But I enjoyed it. And then the last game I played was The Walking Dead Season 2. I played the first two episodes. I liked it. It was definitely a little slower than Walking Dead Season 1. Definitely was more like a movie. Not really doing too much. Kind of just going along, picking the occasional dialogue option. There wasn't even that really, from what I remember, not too much even adventure kind of moments of walking around in it. It was really just kind of you're getting handheld through the story, and the story wasn't even, you know, that exciting. So I've heard it picks up kind of later on, so we'll see. I'll be playing that a little more this week, I think. And that's it for me.
All right. I got a few other things. Costume Quest 2. Do we want to talk about this at all? We've all actually played a bit of it, I think. I think, have both of you guys beat it?
No, I haven't beat it.
Yeah, I think I beat it the Halloween night that when it came out. So it's been a while.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't know. It seems like all the reviews were pretty lukewarm on it, and I kind of see why. It's weird because, like, the first time around, it was kind of charming, and even though there's an element of, I guess just grinding, feeling like you're doing fetch quests and all that kind of stuff, there was still a charm to it, and I liked the story. I liked the setting. And then this time around, like, I don't know, a lot of it, it's not really on Halloween night, or maybe it is, but it doesn't feel like it is because you're kind of jumping back and forth in, like, time and stuff.
It's almost like they're missing, like, the charm that the first one had.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what it is, but I don't know. It's hard to pinpoint what exactly it is.
I'd say it's missing a bit of the simplicity of the original.
Really?
Going to different areas, the whole traveling through time, it doesn't feel like you're trick-or-treating.
Yeah, exactly.
You go into a futuristic structure and you forget, oh yeah, there's this whole trick-or-treating aspect to this game that is lost on me at this point.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like Halloween anymore.
I still like it. I would just say I did it trying to get the one achievement. Can't remember what's it called. It's the one where you have to play the entire game or do every battle with someone in the candy corn costume, which does nothing.
Right.
Hardcore. which is funny, but it really makes the game not fun because you have to watch each time it's the candy corn's turn, it has a text blurb, and you have to watch that every time. And, I mean, it's my fault for being a bit of an achievement whore, but, you know, I'm not going to play this thing twice. What am I done? So, kind of took away from the experience, and I don't want to take a piece out of the game for that. That's more on me, I'd say.
Well, the other thing, too, is, the fact that, like, there's a handful of costumes that are recycled from the last game, right? Like, I would have thought it would have been, like, all new stuff, and I don't know, just the fact that you're kind of, like, it does, I don't know. The first game, I felt like, you know, it came out and people were kind of willing to forgive any of its shortcomings just because it was a cool idea and it was fun and all that stuff. But it's like now you're giving us the sequel. You've probably had a bit more time. I assume the first one was somewhat of a success and they just didn't bring anything new to the table, right? And like sometimes you don't have to do that for a sequel, but I feel like in this case, people were expecting them to step up a bit and they kind of didn't. So
I think the first one, it was a little more like the level design was a little more designed to gate the player so that you need to find the costume pieces to get the costume that you need to proceed to the next area. And I don't know, I had this feeling like you're kind of more wandering aimlessly.
I was definitely feeling a little more confused, like, in this one. Just there's sort of that, like, especially when you get to the future stuff and there's sort of like a central hub and you keep going out and coming back to it. And
yeah,
like, yeah, I was, it wasn't as straightforward, I guess, but
again, missing simplicity.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose that's the case. Kind of a related game, I would say, that I've played a bit is Citizens of Earth.
Ooh.
Which I mean,
I couldn't believe you actually played as long as you said you did.
Yeah, I've put in like 4 or 5 hours into this thing, and I would definitely keep playing it, and I probably will. I was playing it a lot on the train, and now I'm not going to work, so I haven't gone back to it. But I mean, I really have been enjoying it, and
I'm actually surprised.
I mean, tell you the truth. Maybe it'll get really hard and there will be grinding elements and that will kind of bug me. But I mean, I found the battle system to be, you know, not overly complicated, and it's deep, but it's not, I don't know, hard to figure out. Yeah. And I guess I will agree. I know that there were some reviews had pointed out like some of the UI, not that it's poorly designed, but that, maybe I just didn't know where a couple things were. Like, I know
it's not well explained.
Yeah. Like, maybe it could have used a little bit of tutorial stuff, even though I generally dislike tutorial stuff. Like, I know, I'm pretty sure I read a few people who complained, like, or you had mentioned that people had said, like, they couldn't figure out how to swap in new members.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Like, they thought they had to go to one specific place to do that or something.
Yeah, that's right.
And initially I was like, okay, I know Andrew said you can do that, but how do you do that? And then once you figure it out, it's like, oh my God, it's the easiest thing.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, it wasn't quite obvious.
Yeah, I know we added sort of like the mom as the tutorial character. So her talent is like the tutorial. So it's kind of like tutorial listing in there, but we only kind of mention it one time right at the beginning. So if you didn't really pick up on it, it might not be obvious that that's what you do. And we don't really, at the beginning, I think one of the shortcomings is we don't really emphasize like how to access people's talents. So you probably don't even kind of explore that aspect of the game necessarily when you're looking for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I played it briefly too. I think I said to Huck, I actually really enjoyed the pace of exploration. I find with so many games where you click on something and those types of RPGs, when you inspect something, you got to watch some pop-up that you can't advance. Kind of like Huck's complaints about skipping cutscenes and stuff like that. I could check stuff out really quick, hit a few buttons, realize it's not important, or just get what I need out of it and move on to the next thing. So when you're going into the city for the first time and meeting new characters, it's not a chore going to talk to them. It's like, a sense, gathering quests, potential quests, getting a feel for the town. And I find that's where a lot of old school RPGs get bogged down, is that intro and having to talk to people, and it can become cumbersome. I thought that was actually really good. For me, I found the first battle challenging. I don't know if I'm alone in that, but
the tutorial battle?
Maybe I just didn't get something, so I gotta go back. I like the system, but for some reason I think I was playing around with stuff too much. Like, I was you know how you could, each the different things cost different points and it charges back up and stuff like that. I was, I don't know, I think I was not optimal in what I was doing. I was a little too experimental, and I think I might have died during the first battle.
Really?
I can't remember.
That could definitely happen if you probably hug the whole time or something like that. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember exactly what I did, but I was just kind of experimenting, just seeing what was in there and what I could do, and I think...
The other thing that people don't do, I think, is they don't explore the like upper area of the vice president's house, because after you get the mom and the brother, if you go back upstairs, there's like a bunch of experience points up there. So you can actually like level up before you even get to that first battle, which helps.
Well, I did like, I think I did. Oh. Well, is that, I did the flashback sequence stuff.
Oh yeah. You went into the dream.
All that stuff. So, I mean, I thought that stuff was really neat. So I'm on an Xbox, man. You gotta get that thing on Expo ASAP, and I'll thousand that thing in a heartbeat.
You give us some money, and we'll port it for you.
I mean, the one thing I would say that has really drawn me to the game as well is I like RPGs that are set in the modern day. Like, I don't know what it is, like, why there aren't more of them. Maybe they, you know, people just want that classic fantasy setting or whatever. But I like that, and I saw a couple of reviews kind of like hammering you guys for the humor in it, but I actually really like the humor.
Yeah, the humor is really hit or miss, again, just like everything else in the game. I don't know. I like that sort of like tongue-in-cheek, I'm an idiot kind of approach to it, but you know, some people don't like that. I guess I find that some people maybe going in expecting like the second coming of Earthbound, and they're disappointed.
Right.
So that's not what we're making. We didn't set out to make, you know, Earthbound 4 or whatever the next Earthbound game is called.
I mean, I guess
we just took the modern setting and sort of like the battle kind of mechanic type things. So I think there were certain expectations that were set that we never were planning on living up to.
Right.
And I don't even know how they got set. So
yeah,
we'll see. No.
Yeah, but I like it a lot.
Cool. Yeah, you'll probably get bogged down later on, but
I'm not going to beat the game.
Yeah, it gets a little more grindy later on.
Something that was free on PlayStation Plus, I don't know if either of you guys checked this out, but I definitely wanted to mention Apotheon.
I played it a bit, just a little bit.
I was liking it.
Yeah?
I don't know like that I'll necessarily go back to it in the immediate future, but I mean, the art style is awesome. Like, it's kind of it's basically like a 2D God of War. And the art style is done in sort of like the old Greek art
mosaics, like almost
like pottery and stuff like that. Yeah. And the thing that I found strange about it, like the combat is initially feels really off. Like, it's not what you expect, because it's kind of like one of those systems where you kind of can move your character around as much
like
as you want.
You're like in Quap, you know?
Kind of, yeah. Like,
you're a little
like
floaty.
The movement of your character is very separated from the like swinging of your weapon.
Yeah.
And it feels very odd, but at the same time, it kind of gives you this weird freedom to get like, these strange, like you can jump up and kind of like hammer people and then they go flying because of the physics and stuff. And
yeah.
I don't know. I actually found it kind of satisfying and interesting, but I could see how like it initially feels like it's not polished or something.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I don't know. I was digging it. I don't know that the story was necessarily pulling me in, but
I played it for maybe 45 minutes. And I found that what turned me off near the end was I felt like I had no direction of where to go. Like, I mean, you have the map icons, which tell you where to go, but I had no idea of why I was going to those places. You're just kind of like, go to these three places in opposite ends of the map. And, like you're being attacked or whatever. And I like the combat. But I didn't really know kind of like what the purpose of doing what I was doing was. And so I kind of just got, you know, I had enough of the combat and then it wasn't kind of offering me anything else. So I just kind of stopped playing at that point. I don't think I'll go back to it. I still have it installed, but we'll see.
Okay. Just two more things for me. A couple Wii U games. I mentioned the game with the long loading times. And I'll just say right up front, that game is Lego City Undercover.
Oh.
This was a game that I kind of picked up, thought maybe I could play with Kieran because he's kind of into Lego and stuff. And initially he kind of seemed interested, but fuck, man. Like, you will not believe how long the load times are in this game. And he, like, for a game that's aimed at kids, it's death to this game. Like, I cannot see a kid sitting through this.
I can just imagine the angry parent emails these guys get, because I get these angry parent emails for Wii U.
Do you really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
On our Facebook page, people are, they just unleash. My kid is screaming all the time. This game takes so long, crashes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Doing a lot of PR managing of people's expectations and calming them down, assuring them the patch is coming, all that kind of stuff.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. It's fun.
Would you say most of the people complaining are male or female?
Probably male.
Dad mentality.
Oh, bullshit.
Dad mentality.
It's actually, we have quite a few female followers on the page that are active on the page, which is kind of cool to see.
Nice.
And they're not all bitching about how it crashes and stuff, which is nice also.
Well, that's nice of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not too much else to say about Lego City Undercover. I mean, it's like an open world kind of GTA type game in a Lego world, which I thought seemed kind of interesting and fun. And I like that idea.
Marvel Superheroes is like that, too,
but
though,
yeah, that's so. The thing. Before this, when this game came out, there weren't the Marvel superhero games weren't doing that, but now they are. They are open-world games as well, and yeah, I mean, put the load times in there. Even without the load times, I still think I'd prefer to play LEGO Marvel Superheroes, or I'm still kind of interested in trying out some of the LEGO Batman ones, so yeah, I don't know about that one. And then the last thing, I played a little bit of Kirby and the Rainbow Curse, which, love the art style, love the claymation look to it. I know some people have been complaining that, I mean, it's a game that's very, like, the touch screen is how you control Kirby and everything. And a lot of people have been complaining that you can't do that and look up at the screen at the same time, so you don't get your beautiful 1080p
4K.
Yeah.
4K up converted.
But I mean, I don't know. Come on. Like it still looks pretty sweet on the gamepad, and
I find one of the biggest problems with Wii U is I look at the gamepad more. Like I'll be playing a game that's looking beautiful on my TV and I just get in the habit of looking at the gamepad.
Yeah, I mean, like, it really is kind of like a portable system that you just can't take outside of your house, but...
Can't take your eyes off that thing. It's right in your face.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Frank, just put on the basketball on the big screen and just play exclusively on the touch screen. That's the way to go.
Frank didn't buy a brand new 4K TV just to play games on his Wii U gamepad.
Well, that's what he's saying. Watch the basketball in beautiful 4K yeah, on there.
That's what I'm saying.
I guess, but you can't be looking at two places in, at the same time, right? Or can you?
I guess not. Maybe if I had an AR game pad, everything would work out.
Beautiful.
Overlaid over top of the basketball game.
You got it.
Kirby dribbling around Kobe.
But, yeah, I mean...
Sorry, Anthony Davis, I mean.
As far as Kirby goes, I kind of... I don't know. I think I've said this before, but like I just find that all the Kirby games are surprisingly not challenging enough, and that's been a complaint of mine. But these ones, like this game and then I guess the one that inspired it, which was Kirby's Canvas Curse, I believe it's called, they're a little bit of a different beast, and I kind of am enjoying it so far. But... Not so good to play with the three-year-old son because he just wants to draw everything and you're just like, fuck, get your hands off.
Beat it, kid.
Yeah, so maybe not for him, but it's good. And I think that's it for me. Yeah, pretty much. So let's, should we jump into...
Top five
or hot button? Which one do you want to do first?
Oh, I forgot about the hot button.
Or do we want to skip hot button?
maybe.
Yeah, let's do the top five and then we'll reassess.
All right. Countdown top five most anticipated games of 2015. I had a hard time with this because I feel like all the stuff that was going to be on my list was probably mentioned either on my top five for last year or like best in show for E3 or I don't know. Like it was hard. I kind of tried to pick stuff that wasn't the obvious stuff here, but I don't know.
Well, why don't you pick your most anticipated? Just straight up.
Because it's obvious. It's obvious.
Well, hey, that's the nature of the biz, pal. Don't try to be cool. Yeah. That's the one thing I hate about game journalism. Trying to be fucking cool and saying, I'm really looking forward to this game over here. We know you're saying you're looking forward to that more than Uncharted 4, Drake's Deception? I don't think so. Although my list is kind of like that, but it's genuine.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll see. We'll see what we got. You want me to go?
Sure, go. Start it off.
Yeah.
All right, number five.
Yep, do it.
King's Quest. The new King's Quest.
Is that even coming out in the next 3 years?
Probably not.
Well, it'll probably be on my list next year, too. Let's just say right now I'm very interested to see what a new King's Quest will look like. And the trailer... You know, it wasn't a ton of stuff to look at, but I liked the art style that I saw. Number four, N++. Have you guys played N+? Have we talked about this before?
I think I've played a little
N+.
Yeah. Toronto Studio, I think.
Yeah, N Plus was kind of like, it came out, I think I played it on the DS. I'm sure it was on other platforms as well. But like
Xbox 360?
It was kind of like, it came out just at the like the very start of indie games, I would say, in general, or like indie games is what we know today as indie games. So it was like this, for me, it was just this eye-opening like 2D throwback that just boiled down everything to like, you know, a few quick place jumps to get to the end of a level and then boom, onto another level. And I had never seen really anything like that before. And there's been a lot of indie stuff that's kind of copied that formula or, you know, done stuff similar. I think they're going to up their game for this one, so I'm really looking forward to it. Number three, Axiom Verge. I think this one comes out
very soon.
Soon, yeah.
Yeah, it's, a month or something, not even.
Out of all the Metroid kind of clones that we've been seeing, and
go
hey,
ahead, say it.
Let's.
Say it.
Metroidvania?
Yeah.
Let's face it, no. Nintendo is not giving us the goods on this front, so other people have to step up and do it. But this one looks the most like a Metroid game, I would say. And it certainly seems to be drawing from other stuff as well, like Blaster Master and some of these other NES games that are sort of unsung classics. So can't wait for that one. Number two, I'm going to say... I'm going to say The Witness.
Uh-oh.
Which...
Johnny. Johnny Blow.
Yeah. I think... I'm sure this has been on lists I've done before, but I just, you know, this guy talks a big game. I want to see what the big deal is with this one. I think it'll be pretty cool. And number one, I'm just going to go tie for Uncharted 4 and Batman Arkham Knight because they're the obvious ones.
Top dogs.
Okay, what was last year list?
What's that?
What was the last one on your list?
The Witness?
No, like the very number five.
King's Quest?
Yeah, it's gone. It's off the list.
But, you know, like you got to have the ones that are a little bit.
You can't have a tie for your number one.
Why?
You can have a tie for your number, like the bottom of your
list. I mean, I got all these other honorable mentions too. Like, I feel like these are the ones that people would be more interested
in. Let's hear the honorable mentions. Let's hit it.
No. All right,
I've got Severed, which is the new Drinkbox game. Yeah. No Man's Sky, Splatoon. Yeah, I could go either way on this one, but I'm curious. Ori and the Blind Forest, Inside, which is the new game from the guys who did Limbo, and Broken Age Part 2.
Okay.
All right, Frank, hit it.
Number five, Cuphead.
Of course.
Number four, Legend of Zelda. If it comes out this year, I think it will.
I don't think it will.
Number three, Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Mm.
Number two, Uncharted 4, Drake's Deception. And number one, won't have to wait too long for this one, 7 days, Ori and the Blind Forest.
Oh, is it out that soon?
Yeah.
Shit.
Is it only Xbox One?
And Steam, I think.
Steam, yeah. Beautiful.
I hope not, though. I hope it's just Xbox One.
You... Big face. Okay, my number five, my number five just popped onto this list as of a couple days ago. Metal Gear Solid Phantom Pain. Number four, Uncharted 4. Number three, Xenoblade Chronicles X. Number two, Arkham Knight. Number one, Rise of the Tomb Raider. I'm more interested to see how the Tomb Raider follow-up goes than Uncharted, because I feel like Uncharted, they got their formula down. It's going to be a good game. I'm anticipating it, but not highly. It's going to be good. It's going to be great. I don't really need to be hyped about it. I'm just going to have accepted it as good already. Same with Batman, but I want to see what they do next gen more so than, I think, the Naughty Dog guys. And Xenoblade's awesome, so...
Cool. Any honorable mentions for either of you guys?
Yep.
No. Huck.
Yep.
So Rise of the Tomb Raider, Xbox exclusive.
Yep.
Your number one most anticipated game of 2015.
Uh-huh.
What you gonna do, brother?
Probably wait until it comes out the next year.
It's never coming out.
I'll just come over to your house, Frank, and
you're
steal
welcome
your
anytime.
Xbox.
Anytime, bro.
I'll get my X-Bone on Tomb Raider, all over Tomb Raider. My honorable mention, Star Fox Wii U and Quantum Break. That's it.
Cool. All right, so seriously, we're skipping Hot Button or what? Let's give it a 5-minute set a limit, 5-minute discussion.
Okay, let's do it.
So I guess this kind of comes down to, it's more about Let's Play videos in general, I would say, but we did talk at some point about Nintendo had come down on these people and said, you're not allowed to...
These people being YouTubers.
YouTubers.
Twitch streamers.
You're not allowed to create videos with playthroughs of Nintendo games and make money off of it because that's our property and you're making money off of our property. Which, you know, seemed like a pretty backwards thinking thing to do. And I think at some point they realized, okay, maybe this isn't, you know, we're not getting good press out of this. We got to come up with a different solution. So they came up with this revenue share program, which I don't have all the details. You were saying 40% or 30% for...
Yeah, I think it was... I could be wrong, but essentially it was basically like if you put up a video with Nintendo content, they take 40%. But if you agree to have your channel do exclusive Nintendo content, they'll only take 30% of each video.
Right, right, okay.
So essentially, like, if you agree to only show Nintendo stuff, they'll give you a little more money. Meanwhile, right now, the YouTuber is getting 100%.
Right.
So...
And then, you know, on top of this, there's also issues with, like, there's a whole process that, you know, to get your video posted, you have to apply, Nintendo has to approve it, like, it's... And it takes a few days, if not longer than that, so it's just not something that people are really happy about, and it doesn't... I mean, it still seems pretty backwards, if you ask me, but, I mean, what do you guys think? Like, is this actually... Do they have a right to say, we should get a cut of that? And do people actually watch Let's Play videos?
They do.
Oh, yeah.
I don't believe it, but they do. Especially kids. Do you know how many people I talk to and who have, like, kids that are, I don't know, between 10 and 15, let's say? And all they do is post videos of them playing games to YouTube.
Well,
it's a huge deal. So I can see why Nintendo actually cares.
I have a very close to my heart example of this. So when Citizens of Earth was released, some Spanish or Mexican YouTube guy did a playthrough of, or a playthrough or a walkthrough of the first, you know, 20 minutes of Citizens of Earth. And I clicked on the link and it had 250,000 views, this video. And I'm thinking to myself, so the first thing I'm thinking to myself is, oh my God, this guy's going to make more money off his Let's Play of my game than I'm going to make from the game. But then on the other hand, like, you know, good for him. He obviously has some sort of personality that people want to tune into him to watch him. So I think there's this weird dichotomy where I'm jealous of him making this money, but I accept it.
I'd kind of disagree. I don't think it is for the people's personality. And I think Sean can partially attest to that with toy unboxing videos and stuff like that. I think it's more the actual toy and people want to see the game. And let's say in the case of your game, it could be someone who plays your game and just destroys it for a half an hour and costs you sales. So someone could go on playing Nintendo games and say how bad they are the whole time. Those are people who may never buy the game as a result. So at least, like, I'm kind of with Nintendo. I don't give a fuck about Let's Play videos. I'll play the game if I want to try it or do something. Like, it's maybe one day I'll find a personality that, like, would make me want to hear what they have to say about it or kind of dissect it. I just don't have time. And if I have time, I'm going to play a game, not watch someone else play it.
I mean, it's a weird thing because, like, I can see there is an argument to be made where you could say at some point, like, what's the difference between putting up playthroughs of a game and putting up a movie, you know, that you don't own the rights to? Like,
yeah, like, what about Mystery Science Theater or whatever? I'm pretty sure, I would assume they pay for the rights of the stuff they're commenting on or making fun
of. Like, I'm sure there's people that even you know, put up these Let's Play videos with very minor commentary, and it's like you're basically, you know, like you're not controlling the game. That's the difference. But, you know, there's a lot of games where maybe that's not even that important. You are just playing it. Like, would you watch a Let's Play of the Telltale Walking Dead games? I mean, that to me, like, seems like I just played the game now. Like, I don't need to buy the game.
I've done that before for games, like even rare games that I will never buy. I've watched Let's Plays, not entire Let's Plays, but I've watched bits and pieces here and there and kind of got the gist of what's going on. But I think there's also this weird sort of shift going on right now where there's these internet personalities coming up that are almost taking the place of traditional media, and they are more connected to their, I think they're more connected to their following, subscribers, community, whatever you want to call it. And the traditional journalists are still kind of behind this, you know, professional wall almost, whereas these guys are kind of like in the trenches with the community. And I think just having, I think these guys put out so much content that they almost become friends with the people that are watching. Whereas like on IGN or whatever, you might see, the people that do the videos like once a week or whatever, and you kind of get to know what they are. You read their stuff, but it's not as personally tied to one of them as these YouTubers are, these YouTube guys are. And I think there's like this big shift where people are starting to trust these YouTube personalities more. And I know, like for Citizens of Earth, a lot of the review codes we gave out were to these YouTube Let's Players just to try to get the game out and right, visible to as many people as possible. And I feel like there's a shift right now where, like Nintendo's a little different because they're such a big entity. Everyone knows Nintendo. They put out like one big game every 6 months, so everyone's anticipating it. They market it. Like, people know that game's coming out.
Yeah.
But for smaller indie titles, you know, you got to really scratch together to try to, one, get in the big marketplaces, which is hard without money, and, you know, just try to get eyes on the product, which is why I was so surprised when I saw this, you know, Spanish guy with 250,000 views. And I feel like, yes, he's making money off of the videos, but at the same time, it's now exposed our game to 250,000 people. And if like a small percentage of that 250,000 people choose to buy it, it's probably way more than who would have bought it if he hadn't put up a video at all.
Right.
You know, so he makes his money, but we also get money.
But you believe that there's more people would actually go out and buy the game based on that than would say, I kind of have already seen it. I don't need to play this now.
For certain games, like for our game, which is long.
Right.
Yes, I think so. But for a game like The Order 1886, which we're not going to talk about this show really, but is apparently short, or mm-hmm. any other game that is like 4 to 5 hours, yeah, I think it really would hurt those type of games, especially if it's not sort of like skill-based or it's really just kind of like going through the process. I think it would hurt those games a lot.
Right.
But any game with depth or a skill aspect to it, or replayability like a roguelike or a sports game, I think those can really enlighten people more if they want to buy it or not, rather than, you know, just show them what it is and then they're done with it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I'm not into the MOBA scene, but stuff like that I think works
yeah.
for those types of videos. Maybe I'd probably say Warcraft, MMO stuff, skill-based, competitive gaming.
Yeah, like those games really have no endpoint.
Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, that's
it's like
you're
learning
watching
new skills and getting into the game.
Yeah,
like stuff like that, it applies. If it's story based, I agree with Sean. It's like it's kind of a movie in a way. There is a limited amount of ways to do things, and is it actually the execution that makes that fun, or the discovery? And can you get a hint of that discovery aspect watching a video? I think you can.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird because YouTube is like this whole other world that I do not understand anymore. You know what I mean? like I know at Gameloft, like for when we launched games, they would do a lot of advertising through these YouTube channels and stuff. And it just seemed like the weirdest thing to me, you know, like they put out some sort of cooking game. So they'd go to like, I'm not even talking Let's Play people. Like I'm talking, they'd go to somebody who is like had a cooking show on YouTube and get them to like do some sort of video that would mention this game or whatever. And these people are like making a living. The YouTubers are making a living off of like sponsorship stuff like that. And
well, they're essentially just like amateur TV channels. It's almost like your local news. Like what's the guy Jay did the movie about?
Ralph?
Captain Video.
Yeah.
It's almost like that, except now instead of the outlet being your local cable channel, it's YouTube.
Right, but I mean,
it
is weird. There's a book I was reading, too, about how this guy who was a marketer basically knew the ins and outs of how to build buzz online by influencing bloggers and YouTube people and stuff. And it's because all these people are kind of like, they're kind of amateurs, but they're kind of like at the point where they're like, yeah, I'd like to make a living doing this. So you like dangle a little bit of something and they'll take it because they want the money or they want the exposure or whatever.
I've read a similar book about this.
And it's just like...
they won't verify it.
Yeah, and it's so easy to manipulate this system that, you know, all these people can be bought so easily. And then it's like they have such an enormous influence now.
Yeah. It is a little scary. And a lot of them kind of just fly off emotion. Whereas I think a lot of the, and maybe that's another aspect of what Nintendo's trying to protect against. Maybe they don't want these people just kind of flying off with emotion, talking about their games. They want it to be more of a, you know, in-depth discussion or analysis.
Maybe.
But I don't know. I think we're at this weird time where sort of like the landscape of games journalism / marketing is really like getting weird. And I don't think Nintendo, I don't think EA, I don't think anyone really knows what the heck's going on anymore.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it used to be simple. It used to be you go to IGN, you give them money, they put an article up, you sell lots of copies. You know, it's like pretty straightforward. And now it's completely different.
Yeah, well.
I mean, that still helps, but.
I guess that's arguably part of where the whole Gamergate explosion came from, although I don't think that's exactly what ended up coming out of it. But
I mean, even do you guys follow IGN at all? You know, the two guys that just left IGN, Greg Miller and Colin Moriarty, they formed their own sort of like
YouTube channel.
Almost like independent YouTube channel, right?
Yeah.
And with, I think they took a couple other guys from IGN with them.
Right.
And now they just do daily streams and videos. And that's how they make their living. And they have like a Patreon thing. And now it's all based on donations. It's just donation based and advertising based income, you know, yeah. And they're just providing content commentary. And I think, you know, that's a valid, they have like good opinions, good insight. I mean, those guys are a little different than sort of like amateur, podcasters or, YouTubers. They actually were in the industry, in the media. So they are a little more critical, I would say. But, you know, they're doing the same thing, essentially. They're kind of just going out on their own. They're cutting out the middleman, right? They're no longer getting a paycheck from the man. They're getting it right from people. So hoping to make a little more money that way. It's interesting. I don't know. I think Nintendo's in a tough spot where they feel like they're losing sales. But I don't know if they might be losing more sales by alienating these people that, like you were saying, have such a big voice now. Because they have such a large community they can kind of just bitch to and then influence.
I don't know. Nintendo just never really seems to ever get it. You know what I mean? Like, they just seem like the uncool uncle that's, you know, never going to truly be with the times. But
what is there to get, though?
Well, I mean, I'm not saying, like, they still make great games.
Make a
but
good
they just,
game, people will play it. Like,
that's what it comes down to for them, for sure. But I just mean...
I like that. I find that very refreshing. I don't want necessarily, internet buzz determining what games are talked about and popular. Like, I want the games to speak for themselves, and it's tough because not everyone can afford or have the time to play every game, but...
Yeah, but I'm just talking about stuff like, you know, online networks and like their e-store and shit like that. Like, it just seems like they're
Frank, you're talking about Nintendo here. You're going to know every game Nintendo comes out. But if someone, some indie guy, makes a good game, the only way you're going to find out about that game is by him networking with all these YouTubers and getting the word out that way. It's a more like a viral aspect. And I think by, I mean, obviously it's different because Nintendo is just like a huge beast.
Yeah, that's true. That's 100% true. I wouldn't disagree with that. I guess, and I obviously agree that Nintendo's online presence on their platforms is atrocious. I just find...
I can also say from... From
Nintendo's side... Okay, Sean.
Yep.
Your child is 3 years old.
Yep.
They can't really play a game. They can actively participate or look at it almost like a cartoon, right?
Yep.
And what do they love?
I don't know. Colors?
Nintendo.
Well, yeah. That's
he loves Mario, true. He loves Toad, he loves all that stuff. So obviously Nintendo is doing something right, even from a non-gameplay perspective, as like intellectual property is characters and stuff that kids like and just like watching because they like the look of them, they feel like cartoons, there's something exciting about them and interesting. So kids will watch that stuff on YouTube and in some cases might supplant actually playing a game. So, I mean, getting back to the original question, do they have a right to take a cut of that stuff? I personally feel like they do.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm pretty on the fence with this one. Like, I feel like I just don't know why.
No, is 40%. Sorry, is 40% a lot? Yes, it's way too. Like, maybe 10, 15, 20% would seem a bit more fair. But is there some entitlement? I think so.
The thing is, like, it's also the fact that Nintendo thinks they are, you know, they are the only ones who can step in and do this shit and say, no, you got to pay us. Whereas everybody else lets it go. Everyone else just, you know, deals with it and, you know, understands there's benefits and there's drawbacks that come with it. But, you know, whatever, this is how it is. But Nintendo are the ones to come in and be like, whoa, 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 whoa. You got to do it our way. Like, that, something about that sits wrong with me. Like, it.
Well, you know why? Because their audience is either younger or older people who have grown up with Nintendo and don't care either way. With the other two systems, all they're worried about is what we saw at E3 and announcements and online, always online, how you trade games. They're catering to the opposite of that market. And it's like, don't do anything to piss them off or you'll start a wildfire on the internet as to why you're the worst company ever. And Huck, maybe a good example now for your story you were telling us before the show.
Which one's EA. That?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so this guy, Jim Sterling, who used to write for Destructoid, put this video up basically outlining what Nintendo had done here, but instead of saying it was Nintendo at the beginning, he said it was EA, and it was interesting to see how many people were getting all pissed off at EA, and then all of a sudden he's like, oh yeah, it's not EA, it's Nintendo, and then it just kind of like blew up in people's faces, and they were kind of like, what, Nintendo's doing this? Like, they were shocked, but they were not shocked that EA would do it. So there's this interesting public perspective or perception of the different companies, and it's kind of interesting to hear and listen to.
Yeah. Yet another way that Nintendo and Apple are very similar, in that Nintendo really likes to control how information about their stuff gets out there. And
I didn't even want to bring it up again, but if there was ever a perfect partnership, everything we say is lacking in Nintendo, Apple has. They are perfect. Just get it on. You would take over the world.
Yeah, probably. All right, well, let's move on.
Disney, Apple, Nintendo merger, it's over. You win. You start with the kids, you have adults, you have techies, you got it all.
Yep. All right. Well, let's get on to some junk mail. GameJunkPodcast@gmail.com is where you can send questions and comments to. I think the first one here may have actually been left over from last show. I forget. But so Paul in Ireland says, "Hola, James Gunkers. Do you find the older you get, the more effort it seems to take to find to play games, to actually sit down, fire up a console, and know you have enough time to put some real work into a game? It's becoming a rarer and rarer thing for me. It's much easier to play Candy Crush or Scrabble on the iPad or iPhone. You can do this on your commute while watching some shit on TV or even taking a shit at home or at work. If you get interrupted, so what? Pick it up later. Is this the bleak, grim future of gaming, or do we all just need to keep the dedication up and or build a games room? My question is, will solid, engrossing, time-consuming console and PC games die out over time as our attention spans shorten, available leisure time shrinks, and convenient handheld games thrive and grow in quality and discuss? P.S. Dax is fucking great." I don't know where this is coming from, but I agree. Dax is awesome.
He's been on the show one time, I think. This show.
Yeah, that's true. He was. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, kind of this is definitely a discussion that comes up from time to time, and I feel your pain, brother. But you got to remember that there's also lots of gamers out there who are the age that you used to be, maybe when you started getting heavily into games, and they have all the free time in the world.
Yep.
So that's kind of where the AAA games are. I mean, not to say that obviously there's an older audience playing that stuff too, but it, I mean, I would be very interested to see statistics on, you know, the age that people are and, you know, whether or not they finish games, like how many hours they have to put into games. Like there's definitely, when you're in high school, like there's no comparison. Like that's the time to just play games. I
mean, just kill time. I think also there's so many more people making games now that the number and types of games are just diversifying. And so whereas before these sort of like pick up and play for a couple minute games didn't even really exist. Or if they did, they're kind of like the coin op style where you'd play and then you'd die. And right. That was kind of like your quick hit, but it wasn't really enjoyable. Whereas now they've made it more enjoyable. And I think we're just getting more variety, and I think that's good for everybody. So, you know, if you want to play your long tail game, those will still exist. If you want to play your pick up and play for a couple minutes, those will exist. And I don't think anything's going away. I think it's all going to keep coming out. I think people are going to keep coming up with new ideas. I think everything's going to be there, lots of variety. Everyone's going to get to pick what they like. And I think the problem is going to be trying to find all the stuff you like. And like, I think I saw stats on the like Apple iTunes store, and there was like 500 games coming out per day, or 500 apps coming out per day on the Apple iTunes store in January or something.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how do you sort through that? You can't. Like, so that's going to be the problem as more people make games. I mean, Steam's starting to have that problem now, so.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of feel like, I don't know. I think there maybe are a few less AAA games being made today than there were 10 years ago or something. And that's fine. That works for me. Like, you know, just
way less.
Yeah.
There's hardly any AAA games.
Well, I mean, there haven't been the last couple years, but I feel like that's just because games were getting delayed and stuff. Like, I don't know. Maybe, I mean, yeah, I think in general that's true, but I just don't know if it's because we're still in this weird transition period between console generations or not. But I think like for me, it's just kind of like I just look at it like, you know, I'll play a AAA game here and there, but I don't feel the urge to try and keep up with every single one. And, you know, those pick up and play games are nice because you can kind of have a bunch of them going at once. And but yeah, in general, I think all that stuff will continue to exist, and there's a place for all of it. This one comes from Alex. He says, "Hello, game men. It's wonderful to have you back penetrating my ears. I remember beating three dirty dwarves for my beloved Sega Saturn for the first time. And then the cutscene at the end featured one of the titular dwarves uttering the line, "No, but we'll kick your ass." My 15-year-old brain was almost melted by the unexpected profanity in-game. Now, mature audio content in games is common, but at the time it rocked my world. Do you all have any anecdotes about the first time you heard or saw something in a game you thought not possible due to censorship? Good question.
I think mine was probably when I first saw Leisure Suit Larry.
That's true.
I didn't really think that was even allowed in games. I don't know. I was probably like 10 years old or so. And that was like the pixelated boob hot tub or whatever it was.
Yep.
A classic moment.
Well, you know, for me, I grew up on the Commodore 64. And let's face it, that was just the Wild West of video games.
Strip poker.
Strip poker is definitely a factor. There was lots of weird shit out there for the Commodore 64. And like even sometimes the, you know how like they would have like the little demo screens of like whoever cracked the game and
stuff like that.
Like I distinctly remember the version of California Games that I had would always, it would load up and then all of a sudden there'd be a little fuzzy screen and there'd be an audio clip of somebody going, "Oh shit." And for some reason that just always stuck with me. And
I think
it was
I had
like,
that same,
yeah,
it's ringing a bell now. Yeah.
Yeah. So like that was up there for me. I'm trying to think of like console games that maybe like, I don't know. There was definitely the Mortal Kombat Killer Instinct era where games started to become bloody and gory. And
I even find now they're just extremely violent. Like even like the new Mortal Kombat X stuff where they're like ripping out spines and cutting off faces and pulling out brains and like all this stuff.
Yeah.
It's just,
yeah, I'm not crazy about the, well, they're not bad. I just don't watch them all, the Conan O'Brien gaming videos, but the Mortal Kombat one with Marshawn Lynch and Rob Gronkowski is absolutely hilarious. Marshawn Lynch is so funny in that thing. I highly recommend it to anyone. And for me, I guess, I remember Eternal Champions for Sega CD being extremely graphic, but not crazy. I remember, it's weird, since not being censored in a way. I remember Final Fantasy VII, Barrett, the character of Barrett would swear, but it would be starred out. Like he'd drop F-bombs and say shit. And it was, you knew what it was, but it was still kind of censored. But I remember thinking that was pretty cool. And I guess other than that, just the great mighty Pooh in Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Like,
wasn't shocking. I was probably 19 or 20 whenever that came out. So I thought it was refreshing.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there was definitely an era in there, obviously not when I was a kid and not my first encounter, but there was like an era, like maybe the PS1 era, where it was all about like they were really trying to have swearing in games to try and prove like, you know, we're mature and like, you know, for adults and stuff. And it kind of got like to be too much. Like it was just ridiculous. But yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I feel like there's some other good examples out there that I can't think of. All right, we got one from Essie who says, "Hey guys, I was thinking about the really tired debate about video games as art, and I came to the conclusion that perhaps this wouldn't even be a debate if it were easier to place a specific artist to a game. In every other form of media that is accepted as art, there's someone specific, such as the director, artist, musician, etc., that you can look at as the creative force. My question is, if you were going to do this with games, would it be an entire team, or is there a specific person directing each decision made? If it's the latter, who are the best game directors? If it's more of the former, do you think games could get to a point where they're more of a singular work, or will the complexity of them render them always art by committee? I know my questions are always too long. Sorry, thanks for the great show." Not too long at all. Good question, but I think there's already some definite answers to this. I mean, we're talking about the auteur theory, essentially, for video games and whether or not that can exist and whether or not it does exist. And I would say there's definitely people like Hideo Kojima is a big one that people follow him and look to him as like a creative force.
Miyamoto,
although, I mean, the problem with him is I feel like his creative influence is just synonymous with Nintendo. So you can kind of, I don't know, I feel like I have a hard time separating his specific...
Well, I feel Kojima is almost exclusively Metal Gear.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't done a whole lot else. But he's definitely a guy that, when you talk about game directors that people look at as controlling everything,
yeah,
he's up there. And then there's people like Pseudo 51?
Yeah.
And like,
yep,
he's kind of interesting because he's done sort of these smaller games that are a little more rough around the edges where you can really feel like a personal touch to them, I think.
Yeah. And Shinji Mikami, I think, is a guy that did some of those weird games. Didn't he do like Okami and he's another Japanese guy. Or Sakaguchi, who did like Chrono Trigger and the Final Fantasy games, and like he's kind of like a game director. I'm sure he has like a lot of input into those games, especially the early Final Fantasies.
Right.
Even Molyneux.
Yeah.
Right? He's
yeah,
kind of
for
like,
sure.
Kind of a guy. But Tim Schafer.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good one. But like I think the best example really is like the smaller indie games where it's like literally one or two people working on these games. It's just that a lot of them aren't, you know, you've got Jonathan Blow, people like that, but there's not a ton of them that are big names. Like I would definitely recommend, if you haven't seen it, watch Indie Game the Movie, because you get a sense from those guys, like the Team Meat guys.
Yeah.
Some of the you know, the creative struggles, influences between that come from just two people. But yeah, I think in general for big blockbuster games, that is a problem. There aren't enough people that are like this strong creative vision that can do all the things and be able to like, you know, essentially you always hear like great film directors like James Cameron or something like that. I can't remember who it was. I think it was on an episode of I Was There Too. They were talking about James Cameron.
He thinks he can do the job better than anyone on set.
And
all of their jobs better than
And
them.
He can. That's the thing, right? Like, he's so good at all these different areas of filmmaking. And there's not a lot of people in games that can literally do every single area of making a game, so...
Yeah, it's definitely more of a team thing.
I kind of lean the other way. Like, I think movies are more collaborative than... I think we give the director too much credit in some cases.
Oh, yeah. I think that's true, too. Like,
I think there's so many people involved in that stuff, and I think a lot of directors say that themselves. Like, this is not a one-man show. The director gets the accolades, but I don't think that's the case. I think obviously more so in games, but an involved director is looking at everything, every concept, playing the game, saying this works, that doesn't, and... the director of that game ultimately has say in what goes. So
I think
you can say you can enable people to do things right or hire people that are smart so that the director is saying, oh yeah, that works. That's exactly what I was thinking. Or I don't know. I just think it depends. Some game companies lean towards direction that is technical versus creative. And I mean, that can be a downfall sometimes, but I think having a director of a game that is a creative director, not a technical director, can lead to a lot of problems. I think it can also be representative of games that are directed, so to speak, when that's the case.
I think either way, I don't think by like bringing people to the forefront or by saying it's a collaborative effort, it will really affect if people consider it's art or not. I think regardless, I think by bringing someone to the front, you might be able to relate to a product more because you're kind of like, oh yeah, I like that guy or whatever, you know, whereas like, oh, I like Naughty Dog, the company in general, really doesn't have the same feel as like, oh, I like Tim Schafer. So I think by bringing one persona to the front, you do get a sort of more personal, emotional response maybe to a product, which might lead you to think it's more art. But I think, like you guys were saying with movies, like the director is there front and center, kind of as the figurehead of the game or of the movie. And really, it's, I find it strange that in games, it's usually a figurehead appointed by the publisher, not of the game team.
Yeah, it's a PR person.
Yeah, it's not... a PR person, which seems strange because in movies, you always see like the actors and the directors being interviewed. You never see like a guy from Paramount being interviewed about James Cameron's next movie or whoever, you know.
Right.
Which is a strange thing because these people who literally have no real inside knowledge about the game's development are out there, you know, telling about it and speaking about it. And I don't know if maybe that causes some of the like artistic elements to be lost while it's being portrayed to the masses in, you know, a like not interactive form, but just as sort of like getting it out there. And maybe people's perception of games is more of like not that artsy way because of that, because there's no one kind of giving their emotional, like, oh yeah, we like worked real hard on this. And, you know, these guys over here like slave for like 2 months trying to get this guy's drinking animation just to look just right or whatever, you know, like whatever it is. But there's not none of that like personal connection to the product that maybe like movies do better.
But I think that that's a good point. And I think part of it is that, you know, programmers, technical artists, like a lot of these people just aren't very good with public speaking, you know, and for whatever reason, I guess film directors, generally they're people who are, you know, barking commands on set all day. So they are kind of by nature good at that kind of stuff.
Well, let's not pretend there's not corporate involvement in making movies too, saying, trying to get stuff in or take stuff out. Like, film directors are making concessions based on studio input too. So,
oh, I wasn't saying
that.
I wasn't saying that.
Oh no, but... no. I know. Well, I'm just saying that as well. Like that happens too. To say like every decision is at the hands of a director in a movie isn't true either.
No, I agree. But I'm more saying like in that like front facing persona, the director was still involved in those decisions and all the other ones. Whereas like for games, there's like the publisher person, the PR person, who's really only involved in knowing like what the, you know, the points they want to hit in the, whatever. They don't know about, you know, how hard everyone worked, that everyone crunched like 20-hour days for 2 weeks straight. They don't know all that kind of grind aspect of it, you know, which is a little more personal, right, to the story of the game. I think games in general don't portray that, and I think that kind of hurts it as an artistic form. You know, you don't know the love that went into it. You know, like even like seeing a painting, like you can kind of tell someone worked really hard on it. Obviously you can do the same with games, but I think if you had, you know, a figurehead out front, you know, explaining all the details, because it's so technical, right? People can look at a painting and kind of see the brush strokes, but people can't look at a game and necessarily see all the brush strokes that went into it.
Yeah.
Needs a little interpretation.
It's true.
It's a good call.
All right. We got one from Blake who says, "Dear Toad, Wario, and Shy Guy." I don't know who's who. You guys tell me.
Don't know.
"My favorite parts of Ubisoft's gorgeous looking games like Rayman Legends and Valiant Hearts are the musical levels. For the listeners and myself, are there any other musical oriented levels that come to mind and that you would consider seeking out? Also, I skipped on the Wii last generation, considering it to be a piece of shit bowling and tennis simulator aimed at moms and their shitty mom mentality of gaming. However, since I picked up the Wii U, I noticed a feature where I can go back and play games I may have missed. After seeing Mario Galaxy rate so high in IGN's clickbait top 100 games of a generation list, I'm tempted to pick that baby up. Any other Wii classics that are worth a trip back to the 480p waggle well? Warm regards from snowy Boston, Blake." I think we've had the Wii question before.
Cooking Mama, for sure.
The Metroid Prime trilogy is the obvious one for me, but...
Yeah, I don't know. I would say, like, because that's kind of GameCube in its own
way. I would say definitely pick up Galaxy.
Yeah, both Galaxy games, 100% amazing.
Zack and Wiki.
And I would say in terms of looking for a musical game, there's some cool, not a lot, but small musical levels in Mario too. Like really small, grabbing the notes and stuff like that and mini boards.
Yeah, if you like musical levels, I'm assuming you've played Sound Shapes, but if you haven't, like, that's your dream game right there.
Yeah. The only thing I could think of was Parappa the Rapper for some reason, but nice. It's a little out of date now.
That's good. I think Blake might be more of an Jammer Lammy kind of guy. Yeah. From the same creator as Parappa.
Wii games.
Sin and Punishment, maybe? Yeah. Pretty good.
Maybe Wii Fire game, Emblem? Played as much Xenoblade. Xenoblade Chronicles.
I feel like I'm forgetting something major.
No, you're not.
Skyward Sword, but even I didn't beat that, so it's not really fair.
That's it. There's not much.
Yeah.
Most of it you can get on other consoles, or it's shovelware.
Okay, Anthony says, with video games proving that anything and everything is possible for a crossover, like the upcoming Shin Megami Tensei Fire Emblem, what would be your dream crossover video game? Note, this doesn't have to be limited only to video game franchises, as was the case with Disney, Final Fantasy, and Kingdom Hearts. Thanks. Good question. I don't know if I have a lot of great answers for you.
Yeah, I'm kind of stumped. Not very creative when it comes to that stuff.
I've got two ideas for video game franchise crossovers, kind of purely based on the fact that I feel like they could work together. So they're not crazy or anything. But thinking Halo and Metroid could be interesting. Bring those two together. I don't know exactly what you'd get out of that, but I'd like to see Master Chief do some exploring, or I'd like to see Samus just, you know, pure first-person shooter. Never know. And the other one, maybe a little more outside the box, take Kid Icarus and God of War. Bring those two bad boys together. What do you got, Frank?
Nothing. I'm trying to think of something here.
Essentially, you could take anything and throw it in an RPG format, I feel like. You know, like South Park. You know, South Park Final Fantasy crossover.
Yeah,
like,
probably. I feel like FemShep needs to be in there somewhere.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know. It's a tough one.
Mass Effect Star Trek crossover.
Yeah, that's basically the same though.
That's good. I'm thinking of Resident Evil and something like.
What about Ninja?
A self-aware horror franchise or
Resident Evil Cabin in the Woods.
Maybe.
What about Ninja Gaiden and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Yeah, I guess. I think I'd rather just see like a skinned version of the Ninja Turtles, like we said with Rocksteady.
Pretty
right?
much.
I got it, though. I got it.
All right.
Red Dead Redemption and the Lone Ranger.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, that's really what it comes down to is like you kind of just...
Oh, God, I got another one, too. Nothing But Trouble and Resident Evil. You go through Alvin Valkenizer's mansion.
Yeah.
Like that's the setting for Resident Evil. Oh my God, this is an amazing idea. Like I'm not even kidding. You need a mansion with some personality for a Resident Evil game? Holy crow.
See, but like all this stuff for the most part we're talking about sounds more like a mod than a crossover, right? Like to me a crossover is like you want the characters from both things to meet and interact in some way or something.
Yeah, Jill Valentine has to go before Judge Valkenizer and gets put in Mr. Bone Stripper. What else do you want? It's perfect.
All right.
And you have to like shoot. There's like a shooting segment where you have to shoot the wheels off Mr. Bone Stripper to stop it. Oh my God!
Let's go.
This is good.
Go Guacamele and Grim Fandango. Just get the Mexican theme tied in and
sure.
Land of the Dead.
Good work. All right. So last question, we got one from Zydor in Seattle. Some gamers in Taiwan have died from binge gaming. What's the longest you've gone without taking a long break, and what were the games? Frank's got to have a pretty long binge.
Not really.
No?
The only one I can really think of is when Uncharted 2 came out.
Yep.
I got it too, actually. I got home from work that day, and I played it till 4:30 in the morning, got up, went to work, and played it again until 4:30 until I was done it.
It's pretty good.
And then another one, kind of bingey. I have two more. During university, when Metal Gear Solid 2 came out, I had a huge compiler's assignment. And it's like supposed to take 40 hours of work. No, it was not the compiler's assignment. It was the assembly assignment. And I did part of it. I did like a fifth or a quarter of it. It's only worth 5%. And I'm like, you know what? Metal Gear Solid 2 comes out this weekend. I don't give a shit about this.
That's a classic debate in university. It's only worth 1%. It'll take 10 hours. I'll probably just skip this one.
Yeah.
And I played that game all weekend until I beat it. And the other one was when I took a week off for the Wii U release and I think beat Twilight Princess in 3 days straight, like just kept playing it.
The Wii or the Wii U?
The Wii.
Oh, I thought you said Wii U.
Twilight Princess, bro.
Yeah, I thought you said Wii U, though.
Oh, maybe.
Huck City?
I don't know. The only thing I can think of is, like, when I was in, I don't know, early high school, maybe before high school. Yeah, it must have been before high school. I used to stay over at a buddy's house. We'd rent a game, and I remember renting Super Star Wars or Super Empire Strikes Back, like one of those SNES Star Wars games, and just starting it at like whatever after dinner, 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and just going until ridiculously early in the morning, trying to beat it in one go. And so I don't know, that was maybe a 10-hour bender, maybe 8-hour bender. I think that's probably the most. I mean, probably did something similar like that with like a Final Fantasy game or something that you'd rent. You know the game was extremely long and you only have like 3 or 5 days to finish it. So you put a big bender in. But other than that, nothing recent.
Huh.
Other than like 2 hours.
I mean, in high school, me and my friends had like, we would stay over at each other's houses and play video games from 6 o'clock till 4 in the morning. I mean, that was
standard.
Yeah. Like, That's just habit. That's not even a binge.
It's just what you did.
I mean, the only thing that... So, I would say GoldenEye, there was definitely some binge gaming with that. But I mean, I don't remember a specific time period. I just remember being up all night pretty much playing multiplayer GoldenEye. And then... when I got a little bit of the MMO bug, which didn't last that long for me, but I was playing both City of Heroes and World of Warcraft at some point, and like not simultaneously, but with both of those games, I would say there was probably periods where, I might have been playing, 8 hour stretches, or like basically get home Friday from work and play until late Saturday, get up Saturday, play all Saturday, and then like, but there was always breaks in between. Like, I would never, nothing too crazy, I don't think. But yeah, that is the draw of those games, is you just never want to leave because there's more to do and more to see. So that's pretty much it. So thanks for the emails, guys. gamejunkpodcast@gmail.com. I think it's time to wrap this puppy up. I don't know what, it would be really nice to do a group review one of these days again.
The order?
Maybe the order if we can get a hold of it, because I know it's short. But other than that, I guess, what are the big releases coming up in the near future?
Ori, baby.
Ori, yeah.
Axiom Verge.
Definitely looking forward to those.
Well, I guess these are not big ones, but...
Bloodborne coming out March 24th.
That's not for us.
It's not?
No, it's like Demon Souls.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess that's true. It's definitely not something I'm that interested in. I thought you guys might be, but...
I like Dark Souls.
I'll probably check it out.
Really, the next big AAA thing is on my radar is Batman Arkham Knight in June. I don't know if there's anything else between now and then, but...
Seems pretty sparse so far, as far as what's coming up.
Yeah, it's weird, because, like, again... Everything got pushed to this year, and now everything is just going to end up in...
October.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It kind of sucks, but... yeah, I don't know. If we all end up playing Ori or something, that would be cool. We could talk about that, or whatever else is coming out. I know I'm looking forward to the new Mario versus Donkey Kong game. I think that comes out this week.
I'm so scared that Ori is going to get released, and the reviews are going to be... like threes, fours, biggest disappointment of all time.
Yeah?
Oh, please don't let it be so.
Could happen.
Please.
So anyway, we got to definitely talk about doing another live stream so we can play some iDarb and party games and maybe some Evolve or something too.
And I think now I have a setup where it should save out to the Twitch channel, and then we should be able to upload it to YouTube or whatever so people can watch it.
Okay.
Cool. Or watch it on the Twitch. So that might work well.
So what's the YouTube channel? Do you remember?
Is it YouTube.com/GameJunk, I think.
Okay.
Maybe Game Junk Podcast? One of those.
Cool. Yeah. That's pretty much it. Stay tuned to our Twitter account at Game Junk Podcast and our Facebook page, Facebook.com/GameJunk. And you can follow us individually on Twitter at Dirty Frank with 3 R's and Dirty, at My Angry Commute, still kicking it even though you're not commuting.
That's right.
And at Film Junk. Anything else you guys want to plug before we wrap up?
Is Huck City available?
I have no idea. Actually, I was in...
You got to get Huck really City, get Huck.
You know what happened? I was actually in the Banner Saga. I was doing the live stream of the Banner Saga, and some guy named Huck City logged in and was talking to me. Who actually, like, he's like, yeah, I picked this name, like, I don't know, months ago, and it just stuck. Or not months, like years ago. So there was some guy who had Huck City already as a screen name on Twitch.
Your doppelganger.
Yeah. Stole it from me.
All right, well.
So the Twitter handle might be gone already.
Ouch.
I'll look at it.
All right, well, hopefully this will keep you guys happy for a couple months, but we'll talk about maybe doing some more Game Junk in the near future. And until next time, see you guys later. Bye-bye. Coming up on...
Oh, God. Restart.
What? Why?
My phone's going off.
Oh, jeez. What a rock star.